Blog Talk Radio.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chang.
Is it me, man? Is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most people. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room. If you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Leave It in the Ring radio show. I think I see everybody on right now. Chris, Blood, Ruff, are you guys there?
I'm here, brother. How you doing?
Good.
I'm here. Good, baby.
I'm here.
Well, man, you know, I know, where is Strikeheart?
Strikeheart, are you on the line, brother?
I'm here.
All right.
It looks like we got pretty much everybody. Also, we got Rob Blither out of Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah, man.
Ha-ha. Well, I tell you what I just finished doing right now, guys, before we even start getting into the whole segment. We are going to have David Diaz and Jesus Chavez call in for the September 26th match over there at UIC Chicago at the Pavilion. You know, talking about their matchup and, you know, what they're both anticipating they're about. But I tell you what I got. I just got done working out, and now I'm having a big old glass of my own piss.
Nice.
Yep, I heard that has all the vitamins and nutrients in there for me to just down right back and put back into my system because that's just the way it goes.
You know what, Dave, on a serious note, though, because, you know, some people have seen that thing. Maybe they haven't caught up on the follow-up articles. But can we just settle it on our show at least? You know,
yeah, that's where I brought it up. I like to talk about it.
Yeah, go for it, man.
No, go ahead, because obviously you did some research about it.
I heard it started in ancient China. So fill us in, brother.
That's probably some truth to that. I mean, I know that urine is used for like all kinds of stuff around the world for medicine purposes, things like that. And that's probably some truth to that. But in terms of just nutrition, because Marquez said the reason he drinks it is he doesn't want to waste the proteins and the vitamins that the body processes, which is true. There is protein and vitamin in urine, but the whole point is the vitamins and protein that's left over by the body that the body cannot absorb. It cannot use it. That's why it's in the waste. So re-drinking it, there's no reason. You're just being nasty.
Well, re-drinking it, wouldn't you be re-flushing it back out regardless? So you're just taking something that's just been consumed over and over and over and over. I mean, the body obviously is rejecting. That's why we, you know, you have bowel movements. That's why you urinate, because the body's obviously rejecting something that it doesn't need, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's not good or bad for him. It's more of a mental thing. I mean, we're looking at it through our perspective. You know, we're saying, well, why would you do something like that? But it seems like he's, you know, if it's true, it sounds like he's been doing this for years, and obviously he's fine with it, and it's not like he's, you know, it's not like he's mentally, you know, a little bit off or anything like that. It's just, you know, what the man does. Maybe it took him to be in a mega fight, to be on camera for 24/7 for us to finally find out about some of this stuff.
What if it's this here, Dave, though? What if it's us that are mentally off, and this is obviously working for him? I mean, it's obviously made him a lot stronger. It's obviously made him a lot more mentally, you know, a go-getter. What if, and this is the whole thing, is every warrior, every fighter tries to do things to have an extra edge, you know what I mean, to really mentally have themselves prepared when they're going in the war or going in the battle so they can have that overcome of victory against fear. And what if this is just a strategy? What if we are the ones that honestly are in a kind of in the dark going like, oh, my God, because we're not in that warrior mentality?
Well, you know, that's a really good point, because for a long time now we've been saying, what are they giving to these Golden Boy fighters? You know, what are they giving to Hopkins and Shane Mosley and Juan Manuel Marquez so that they're so good when they're older? Now that I know, I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, you know, I mean, you think about a lot of the strategies that a lot of soldiers have done. I mean, you think about the mental abuse that Marines literally have to take in order to have themselves completely psyched up to go into the war, because there's a possibility they're not going to return home. You know what I mean? If you ever watch a documentary on how the DI drill guys, you know, literally get in your face and have an outrageous rant in your face, calling your mother name, calling you names, calling your race or your creed or your religion, pretty much bashing you, breaking you mentally and subconsciously just destroying you and then rebuilding you back into a machine. Are some of these extremes that some of these warriors doing, is it a little bit too much, Blood? Will you think that this could really consume yourself? There is no turning back. You may be walking into the dark too far along that, guess what? You've forgotten there's light behind you.
Nah, I don't think so, man. If drinking his piss works for him, man, if drinking urine works for him, then that's what he should do. You know, I don't think that's something I would take up in my training regimen, but, you know, I mean, I hope that he's doing it for more than mental reasons, though, because I'm pretty sure that shit don't taste good.
I wouldn't think either. Now, I don't know. I'm not trying to be funny. Is he chilling the piss, the urine, or is he putting some sugar in there, Dave? I mean, what exactly is he doing? Is he just directly going into a cup? I mean, but because it's going to have body temperature in it. You know what I mean?
I mean, you saw him coming out of the bathroom with it, so you know that shit was lukewarm.
I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm putting myself in this position. You know what I mean? I'm trying to wear his shoes right now. I'm overthinking. A coach, you know, not to Bernstein. I want to be a great warrior. I want to be the champion of the world. I want to be considered one of the best fighters in the world, right? I'm sitting in the locker room. I finished working out, did a great sparring session, did about maybe 15 reps. Some three of the best fighters in the world. Then I go in the locker room and the coach comes in and says, okay, now piss into this cup. Okay, no problem. I'm thinking maybe he's going to give me some type of urine test to see if there's any, you know, foreign substance in my body. Then he says, no. You're drinking it. How long does it literally take for you to think about that? You know, I mean, to the extremes, I mean, you really got to think. Juan Manuel Marquez, man. I've got a newfound respect for the guy, because I'm like, wow, this guy's willing to do anything to be great.
I mean, it's just a crazy episode, because I didn't even recover from watching him eat 25 raw eggs and then he goes into the bathroom and doing his thing. But I mean, I'll just leave it at this. You know, it's easy for me to say, well, I wouldn't do that. But obviously, like I said before, that's from our perspective, from where we're from. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez, he's from a different country. He's been an athlete down there his whole life. He comes from a different place. So what's acceptable to other people is not always true. You see what I mean? Because, you know, people around the world will eat and drink all kinds of funny things that other people find unacceptable. So, you know what, I'm not going to think too much into it. You know, if he's doing stuff he needs to do so that he performs as well as he's been performing, I can't knock him for it. You know, it's not like he's trying to sabotage himself on his biggest night.
I wouldn't think he's trying to sabotage himself on his biggest night, because obviously his biggest night against, you know, ex pound for pound king to a lot of media and fight fans, Floyd Mayweather, is a big task itself, you know, to Mount Everest, man, to climb up. But I'm sitting there, I'm just trying to figure out what exactly the mentality that a man's got to have in his head to drink his own bottle of fluid, you know, from himself. Strikeheart, I don't know, maybe Strikeheart could put some more insight about it and kind of clear it up. And what, am I the only one that thought that was just a little like, damn?
No. I assumed the same thing you did at first when I saw him coming out with a glass of pee. I figured he was going to have it tested to see, you know, if he was healthy. And then he sat down and drank it.
Now, did he say salute before he drank it, or did he just drink it?
I think he just drank it. I don't recall if he said anything. He just sat down and then downed his own urine.
Do you have a line with it, Blood? I mean, you know what I mean? It's in Mexico, so do you have a line with it? You know?
Man, let me tell you something, man. He better add some Crystal Light, some little flavored Crystal Light or some shit. to it, man. I mean, if I was going to do it, I'd go get me some of that cherry or something, shit.
I'm just like, look, man, you know, can I have some gum after this, though? You know, because I've had some nasty tequila in my lifetime, man, but you got to think, you're just like looking at it. I know I'd be staring at that for a few minutes, you know what I mean? You know, when you got to do something, like I'm a plumber by trade, you know, and when you start off going under these homes, you know, underneath houses, and you really don't need know what's underneath. You hear the stories, there's rats, there's this, there's that. So the first time I had to go down there, for the first couple of months, I had to literally sit at the crawl hole, stare at the ground, and think of strategies. Okay, what if there's a rat? What am I going to do? I could just imagine myself staring at this cup of urine that came from me, right, and just going like, man, what am I doing, man? How do I explain this to the old lady, you know? That's like a new, you try to give her a kiss. She's like, she don't even think your breath smells. You're like, why do you smell like pee? Why does your breath smell like pee? How do you explain that? I don't know. Go ahead, Psychar. Continue, man. Go ahead. Give me your input about this. I just find it a little, I find it hilarious, but at the same time, I kind of understand where he's coming from. But then again, I really don't know where he's coming from.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I'm assuming there's got to be a GNC or a store equivalent to that somewhere around there where he can pick up some vitamins. But if it works for him, he's obviously convinced himself that it helps him out. So, you know, your brain can do amazing things. If he thinks that drinking his own piss is going to help him win a fight, it just may, just because he believes it. So more power to him, but it's certainly nothing. I don't think anybody else is doing that.
You know, well, you know, they warriors have been known to meditate for long hours, right, David Chen? And you know, or they're known to do some really off-the-wall things to prepare themselves, to mentally have themselves just in that pinnacle of strength where, and you go, and you really, and you start to think, I was starting to think about it. I'm like, you know, this guy has been in some really awkward positions. He's fought Manny Pacquiao twice, and he's had to readjust. Both times. He was fighting Juan the Baby Bull Diaz. It looked like Juan was going to have his night of victory. You know, it looked like he was going to put the professor down, sit him down and say, okay, the student's going to take over the class. But somehow, the ruler stick came out, slapped the kid in the hand, and put him down for a timeout. So he's been in these positions where he has to mentally readjust himself. Could this just be one of those things where you realize, this guy is game, and no matter what is put in front of him.
I'll tell you what, if anybody want to make a bet with me, man, I say Mayweather win this fight, and if he lose, I'll drink some pee. And if anybody want to make that bet and go the other way with me, let me know. We can do it on video.
Okay, first of all, right, hold on. Now, are we talking about in the lab type of pee, or are we talking about the old lady's pee, or are we talking about your own pee?
Your own pee. I'm willing to place a bet that Mayweather's going to win this fight. And anybody who want to go with Marquez, let me know right now. We'll place the piss bet on the table.
Yeah, but what if the guy that's making the bet against, what does he got to do? Drink piss
too?
That's
what I'm saying. You got to drink piss. If Mayweather wins, then he got to drink piss. Anyone who got a YouTube channel out there who want to make the piss bet with me. And you can't be going and getting no lemonade either. There's got to be some real shit.
All right, I'm up for that. I'm up for that.
Are you up for that?
Oh, you up for that? Okay.
Okay, Bob Riller is up for it. He's going for Marquez. He believes Marquez is going to win. Now, the bet is here, man. This is a good bet. I like this bet. This is some high-stakes bets here. Blood has announced right now, you know, Marlon Jordan has said, right, I'm leaving the ring. The bet is if Mayweather loses, he'll drink piss. Rob Riddle out of Puerto Rico says if Marquez loses, he'll drink his own urine as well.
Man,
hey, I gotta know. Hey, well, how about this, though? What if you lose and you drink Buddha-sized urine? Since you and him are going at it right now at the moment.
No, man. Drinking my piss is enough. Drinking my piss is enough. All right. Oh, God, no. Don't even joke like that. That ain't even funny. That is torture. That's just messed up. That's messed up on so many levels.
All right. Well, there goes the bet, man. And you know what? Hey, this is only a week away. I mean, what, 2 weeks away, guys? No, a week away, right?
Yeah, it's like next
week. Yeah. Next week.
Mayweather's gonna win. Wait, Mayweather's gonna win. Yeah, listen, don't be drinking no Crystal Light either. You need a person on your video to bring your girl on the video so she can verify that's your shit.
Oh man. All right. Well, you know, man. Let's see what happens. And hey, this is a gentleman's bet, so you guys got to hold up to it because this is the bet. Hey, also in news, really quick, man, before we get into any other big news, you know, last week Alfonso Gomez, who's a friend of the show, Leaving in the Ring, we've had him, you know, on the show, and I've interviewed him a few times, and you know, Machine Gun Red has went down over there and spoken to him. Alfonso Gomez fought in Hawaii against Raul Munoz and was able to KO him in the first round on 8/29/09. So let's just say congratulations. He's got a big fight, though, that set this up. By knocking out Raul Munoz, it set him up with a big fight with a big welterweight who used to be the stablemate of Antonio Margarito, and the fight is set for 11/14/09 with Jesus Soto Caraz, which I know Jesus. I've interviewed Jesus, and I've seen Jesus a couple times. This is a strong guy. A really strong guy. You know, he gave David Estrada a pretty bad beatdown and was able to give a couple other fighters a pretty bad beatdown. He also was successful in his matchup, which was on the same date, which was 8/29/09. Well, Alfonso was fighting in Hawaii. Jesus was over there fighting in Mexico. So congratulations to both guys, and hopefully, the best man wins in their matchup when they face each other, you know. Hey, this Saturday, I'm going to be up over there in Palm Springs, Blood. I'm going to be over there with Rudd and Machine Gun Red, and I'm going to be in a golfing tournament. I've never played golfing before, but I'm going to be with Lee Espinoza on this Sunday, and I'm going to be playing with Alfredo Angulo, Jimmy Lennon, and Boom Boom Mancini. And there's supposed to be some other people's stuff, and so see if I can get my game on. I've never played it before, and it's going to be my first time. I used to make fun of golf all the time, so it's just, you know, I guess it's ironic, huh, that I'm going to be playing golf.
Man, tight work, man. I don't think you could play, though. I mean, you're going
to lose.
I don't
think I could play either.
just don't knock too much. Just don't knock the green out the course too much, you know.
Well, you know what, man? I know I'm going to be dropping the ball in the pond a lot, you know. I don't think I'm going to hit the green pretty often, you know, if you know what I'm saying.
Happy Gilmore style.
Exactly, dude, exactly. But I don't know, let's go with Chris 916. Any news, man, about the MMA world, brother?
Not really, nothing going on right now. Next week, I mean, we're not going to be on until next Thursday, as far as I know. Next Wednesday, there's like that Ultimate Fighter thing you were talking about with Kimbo. That's next Wednesday, but before that, they got an event going on Spike, a little free UFC fight night. There's some pretty good fights on there. Nick Diaz's brother, Nate, headlining that card. So, you know, any MMA fan's going to be looking to watch that. But the only real news going on, and it's not really news, but thing going on is, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it. I'm sure at least one of you have that video Dana White did talking shit about the Mayweather-Marquez fight.
Acknowledging
Noel Marquez and just trying to trash boxing and saying why you should order the UFC pay-per-view instead of the boxing one. I don't know who's all seen that.
What do you think about that video, Chris?
I think that's just Dana White being a promoter. You know,
right.
I mean, this guy bashes anyone that's not in his organization in a mixed martial arts. So, same thing. But, I mean, how are you going to say you're a boxing fan, but I don't know who the guy Mayweather is fighting, you know? And, I mean, based on – and he said, you know, it's only one good fight and all the rest of the fights suck. You know, pound for pound, I think that this boxing card is probably more stacked than that MMA card is, even though it's not normally the case. But he's just hating, you know. He's just doing what he does. He's just talking shit. That's what he's best at, you know. But he's definitely catching a lot of heat from boxing fans from, you know, getting out there, you know, running his mouth, talking a bunch of nonsense.
I don't even listen to that guy, man. Whatever, man. Why don't he get and have him an MMA fight, man? You know, I'm tired of hearing him talk.
And that's true. You know, the thing is this, man. I mean, how many of these promoters, boxing promoters, in all honesty, you know, do you hear them take a jab, you know, literally going out of their way to take a jab at MMA? You know, I don't. I've heard it maybe once or twice, but not as publicly as what Dana White is doing. So, you know, it's not very tasteful on his part. But I understand where he's coming from. He's trying to market his sport, and he's trying to put it in the face of other people. But in the long run, you know, I don't know if he's hurting himself. I can't really say if he's hurting himself. I don't know. Chris, what do you think? I mean, because obviously he's got his cult followers that are going to be hanging off every word that he's going to say about boxing, but then you got guys like us are just going to cringe at everything he says and say, oh, man, just turn it off.
Man, to be honest, I can't knock the man. I mean, obviously everything he's done has been successful. I've been watching UFC since day one, and it wasn't even a sport then. And look at it now, you know, the popularity, and he's, you know, leading the charge. So, I mean, obviously boxing fans aren't going to agree with what he's saying. I don't even agree with what he's saying. I'm a fan of both sports. But,
man, I'll knock him. I mean, we knocked Don King a couple of years, a promoter. I mean, what he's doing is wrong, man. Why can't somebody like both sports? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I like football, basketball, boxing, UFC. I mean, there ain't no competition there, man.
Yeah, but
if you like one, you can like the other. That's the big deal.
It's no different than Don King and Bob Arum knocking each other, or Bob Arum talking trash about HBO. He doesn't like the way they're doing things. You know, they all trying to – they're like a salesman trying to sell their wares. And the best way you go about doing that, it's like politics, you know, you got to tear down your opponent. And, you know, he's a polarizing kind of guy. You know, he's getting attention, he's getting the name out there, and a lot of people are talking about this, and that's what he likes to do, you know, cause controversy. And I don't know, I've heard someone say before, controversy creates cash, and it seems to be his motto, and it seems to work thus far.
Well, but you know what? Like every other person that's caused controversy, or like every kingdom, they must fall. Not every kingdom lasts forever, and I think that's where Dana White may be failing at as a leader, is that thinking that, hey, this is going to last forever. You always got to reinvent yourself. That's the way business is ran, successful people. I mean, you've seen, like, right now coming to my mind, you saw Madonna. She would reinvent herself every single time, right? Or Prince, or even the Michael Jackson, rest in peace. They would reinvent themselves every time. Eventually, doing these type of tactics, I don't know if I'm the only one that would feel this way. It would eventually blow up in your face. Look at Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson used to do all this controversial stuff, it finally blew up in his face, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to watch MMA anymore, and I'm not going to watch boxing any less. I mean, that's the problem. Most people are simple-minded, and if they're willing to listen to something that Dana White's saying, then they're pretty stupid the way I see it, you know. You could like both sports. There's nothing wrong with liking boxing and MMA.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you there. You know, the funny thing is Dana White started off as a boxing promoter, and he comes from a family of people that, you know, fighters. It was a fight family, you know. And what he's doing is it's a business move, and I think at the end of the day he doesn't really feel that way. But as a business guy, as a shark, hey, you don't like any other shark swimming in your side of the ocean, you know, or side of where the reefs are at. So he's going to do what he needs to do. And, hey, more power to him, and wish him the best of luck. But, hey, I know for a fact you ain't going to push boxing out. Boxing's here to stay.
Yeah, what does he want to see? What is his motive to see boxing fail and there's no more boxing? It's all MMA and Dana White's world. Man, fuck that, dog. Whatever. You know, wait. If y'all want to roll with that, that's fine.
And there's one thing I want to say. Like, you can tell Dana White is just saying that crap to promote UFC, because in one of his blogs, if anybody watches his blog, he walks up and sees Steve USS Cunningham. How the hell are you going to know who Steve Cunningham is but not know who Marquez is? You know, so you know he just talking shit there. So.
Yeah, he don't have no credibility when he says he don't know. If he say he don't know who Marquez is, I didn't even hear it because I don't listen to dude. But if he say he don't know who Marquez is, then he don't got no credibility to even talk about boxing. Obviously, he don't watch boxing. So why are you going to listen to something?
He watches boxing. He knows he watches it.
And
he
knows who Marquez is, too.
Yeah, he knows who Marquez is. It's just the way of taking a jab and trying to make it seem like, look, it's a dying sport. I don't even know who these people are. You know, I mean, it's a good deploy in what he's doing, you know. Go ahead.
Basically, I mean, what you were about to say, I'm just going to jump in there. It's a promotional tool. I mean, everyone's talking about Marquez Mayweather based off of 24/7. You know, the fight's getting closer. A lot of more people are talking about this UFC show that's airing the same night. Doesn't really have a big buzz behind it because it's not really that good of a card, you know, and it's just getting overlooked. So he probably thought to himself, you know, how can I get us back in the mainstream, you know? How can I get people talking about us, you know, because they're not talking about the caliber of the fight. It just doesn't even up. It doesn't match up to Mayweather Marquez. So he just figured the only thing he could do was try to create some controversy, you know, like I said before, and now people are talking. It's the only way he could kind of get the UFC back in the limelight or even try to, you know, being spoken about because no one's really talking about this thing.
But just if you look at UFC and the boxing cards, I think on paper the boxing looks better than UFC, but personally I think there will be more excitement on the UFC card than there might be on the boxing card. On paper it might look better, but I think UFC
is I don't know about that really, because you got a pretty good card that's being developed right now. If they stick to it, be true to the card for the Manny. Oh, wait a minute. No, it isn't for that card. My bad. It's for another fight card, the Cotto Pacquiao.
Well,
you know,
actually, Dave, like the Mayweather-Marquez card got like one less fight on it now since that Buda had to pull out.
That's nothing new. That's
of
old
things,
news.
Man.
Man, let's move away from this UFC thing. Who cares about it? That's their gig. They get enough, you know, promotion as it is. Let them do their thing. We're here to talk boxing. Like Strikeheart always says, if it isn't boxing,
I don't care.
Undefeated WBC lightweight champion Edwin Valadio, 25 wins, 25 knockouts. This guy's been known, has been rumored to knock out a horse, supposedly, okay? Will be defending his title versus current WBC super featherweight bout holder Heriberto Soto on the undercard of the Cotto Pacquiao super fight. This is a good fight.
This is a fight,
man, that needs to be watched. Okay, you got two guys. You got one guy, really, honestly, has been polishing up more and more, Humberto. This is, Soto's been a guy that he's been looking for a big fight. He's been looking to put himself on the map of boxing among fight fans, okay? And this is a guy that fight fans have been wanting to see. Then you got this urban legend, this guy that's been going around. He's the guy that gave Oscar De La Hoya the black guy. He's the guy that Manny Pacquiao has been avoiding. He's the guy that's done this and that and this and that, but nobody's really seen. Edwin Valadio.
Hey, man, but that horse shit, that's Duran's legend, man.
That is Duran's legend. But you know what? A lot of big punchers and a lot of other fighters have used the same legend of Duran just to kind of build themselves up. You know, Ricardo Mayorga was another guy that was said to have knocked out a horse with a punch. Now, Edwin's doing the same thing, you know. There's always rumors, you know what I mean? That's back in
the Yeah, he probably did
like
beat
that.
De La Hoya in sparring, though. I wouldn't put that.
Did. Yeah, he probably did.
Probably,
you know?
The horse shit, nah, that got to go. I mean...
Yeah,
I mean, he pack a punch, but he ain't knocking the horse out.
Exactly, you know. It's just to start up a buzz, and that's what it does to you. Like you said, simple-minded people probably may be able to fall into it. You know, I'm trying to think. I think it was Jack Dempsey back in the days, if I remember correctly, used to chew on barks of wood. That was the rumor. It was straining his jaw. So there's always things, you know, that fighters will – well, not the fighter themselves. The handlers will come up with things to kind of set him apart of being invincible so that the opponent can literally just kind of get a little shaken up. So when he walks in the ring, he's a defeated man getting in there. They're not going to have any problems. They're going to look a lot more super than what they really are. And that's what Edwin Valadio may be. I don't know. But this is a guy that has got a great record, 25 wins, 25 knockouts. So we know he packs a punch. I'm going to go with Chris real quick, man. What are your thoughts? Good fight for Edwin Valadio, or could this be the step up that may expose that this guy's just all hype?
Good fight for both guys. Like you said, Soto's been looking for a fight. So has Valadio. I hope the fight's actually made. I mean, I've read about it, but you never know because, you know, with the whole licensing issue with Valadio. But, I mean, it's a good fight. You know, Valadio needs a good test, and Humberto will provide that. I think Valadio, although, you know, like you said, he's kind of unproven, I think he's more talented. You know, Soto's ceiling is not nearly as high as Edwin Valerio's. Soto's a good fighter, but Valerio has a chance to be a great fighter. I mean, he's already well on his way there, even though he doesn't have the resume necessarily to, you know, back it up. But, I mean, I've been reading about this guy. You know, when I got back into boxing, I've been reading Doug Fisher's work, you know, forever, and he's been hyping this kid up since before he was even 5-0, you know, and I think he knows his stuff. You know, he's been following him around in the gym all these years, and he's always, you know, kind of had his back, you know, and saying this guy's going to be something special, and so far it's proved it's rang true. So if the fight happens, I'd go with Valadio just because, like I said, I think he's just more special. I think he's more talented, you know, but it'd be a good test if he gets by Soto. You know, he's definitely got some more accolades and, you know, something more to stake his name to rather than just knocking out a bunch of guys that are past their prime or don't deserve to be in there with him.
Don't Soto have another fight scheduled? He's supposed to fight a guy named Perez or something first. Soto.
Yeah, it's like a warm-up or something like that, just to keep busy, I think.
The young guy Perez is undefeated, so what do y'all know about him?
I don't know, but I know that he's probably going to get run over.
I wouldn't think they would put anybody in their blood to really try to, you know, derail what they have in store for him with Edwin Velayo. But then again, there have been fights that have done that, you know, put that big roadblock where, you know, it's not no longer a matchup, you know. But the thing with Soto is that even if, let's say he does lose, it's going to be a loss where it's going to send him back. It's not going to be like where Eric Morales fought Zaheer, where, you know, they continue to fight. To go on to fight Manny Pacquiao at all, you know. But I want to go real quick what Chris was talking about. Chris, you mentioned something there. You said, you know, Edwin Velayo. The only thing I have is the better oppositions that been faced would have to be leaning towards Soto. He's got more recognizable names on his ledger than Velayo. You know what I mean? I mean, like I said, Velayo has been more of a myth. This is a guy that's got a big, big punch. You know, fighting, I believe his last name was Petalua on the Lightning bout undercard, card itself. That was a guy that was an older fighter, had a big punch, but was really there to be knocked out. I mean, I would have to lean that Soto is the much more polished fighter.
I mean, the thing is, you can't hold it against Valero his level of opposition because he isn't allowed to fight in the States. You know, for the last few years since they found that fracture in his skull or something based off a motorcycle accident. So. He's only fighting the guys that he can get. It's not that – I mean, I understand what you're saying. Soto, you know, he's proved it already in the ring. He's beaten guys like Rocky Juarez. You know, and he fought Joan Guzman, even though he lost, you know. He gave a good account of himself, but, I mean, Valero –
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, but what I'm saying is – let's think about it for a minute. Like, what you're saying is it's not his – not necessarily his fault. I'm not saying it is his fault, but what the fact is that – he is now fighting, but he has not fought anybody the caliber of Soto. Could it be that record alone, 25-25, could maybe sidetrack you, any fight fan, believing, hey, this guy's got a lot of power. But, I mean, anybody can have a lot of power if a man's dead feet in front of him. You know what I mean? There to be put in a casket.
All right, how about this? If they fight, I'll take Valero, you take Soto, loser drinks the piss.
What? You know what I'm thinking?
The piss bet. That's what it's called.
Yeah, that's another bet. Shit.
Yo, y'all taking this piss shit too far, man, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It better not become a thing or anything for leaving in the ring, known for drinking piss.
Yeah, they leave me. No, y'all leave me and blood out to dry and shit like that.
You left you left both your guys selves out there to dry. No, Chris, hey. So let's go with Strikeheart, man. Who's got the odds? Who's got the evens in this bout?
I definitely go with Edwin Valero, even though he hasn't faced a big name opponent that everybody recognizes yet. This will be his chance to do that, and I would expect a knockout in the fight as well. Humberto Soto is a good fighter, but he's not going to be able to withstand Edwin Valero's speed and his power. No way.
So you think he's going to knock out Soto? He ain't never been knocked out before. You think Valero going to knock him out?
I do. I think he's going to be a little bit too fast for him. If he doesn't knock him out, he'll probably get outboxed because if Edwin Valero is getting his way in there, that means he's landing his money shots, and that isn't good news for anybody fighting Edwin Valero.
Let me tell you, this is my problem with Edwin. This is why I'm kind of finding this a little hard. Humberto Soto is, to me, a much polished fighter. He's a fighter that honestly throws more down the pipe. He's a more basic fighter. Edwin has the tendencies of dropping his hands down. He has a tendency of not even jabbing. He likes to look for that big money shot, his left hand, to drop it in straight down the pipe to try to land it. I'm thinking Humberto Soto, which, if I remember correctly, has sparred Edwin before. Just like, what's the name of the other kid that was a lightweight that just got knocked out that we've had him? Urbano Antillon has sparred him. You know, if Soto goes in with no game plan, meaning no jabbing, no, you know what, letting this, sucking this guy in, you know, pulling him into the pocket and then taking a half step back so he can land his left hook or maybe a straight right, then I would agree. Edwin Blahut may take him out. But we're talking about a polished fighter here, guys. We're talking about a guy that has been building his career, a guy that's been looking better every time out, and a guy that honestly is able to close distance to land body shots. That's something Edwin Blahut has not faced at his at the limit of his career at this moment. What do you think, Strike?
Well, we haven't really had a chance because most of the guys he's fought have gone down real early. Even I can't pronounce his name. That last guy fought Petula.
Yeah.
He went down in the second round. So we really haven't gotten a chance to even feel out Valero. We don't know, if he has the legs to go 12 rounds or any of that stuff. This is just our chance to really see what he's made of. But if you're asking me if I think he'll beat Humberto Soto, I think so, for sure.
I'm still on the fence of that match. I'm going to go with Soto. I think Soto may pull it off. I think Soto may have the wits to really get Edwin Valadio. And I'm going to tell you, I think Edwin's not a very fast fighter. I don't think he's that fast. I don't know why yourself or anybody else would say he's that fast of a fighter. I kind of fight him just regular hand speed, not a very... his timing is good, but he's hittable. He's really hittable, in my opinion. And what's funny? When the first time I seen Edwin, this is probably 5 years ago, I think it was, when he was it was in the Ring Magazine, an article about him saying, probably the greatest lightweight fighter that America will never have a chance to see. That was the article. I don't remember who wrote the article. And when I, started to look for this guy, tapes on this guy, getting to collectors to find some videotape on this guy was a lot more polished. And I think that he has such a strong belief now in his punching power that he has thrown the basics of boxing out the door. And I think that will be his downfall facing Humberto Soto. David Chen, what's your take about this matchup between these warriors?
Well, first I would like to say that Bob Arum is not promoting a night of fights anymore. He's promoting a bloodbath if this fight goes through. But Soto is very good, but Soto is smaller than Valero, and I think that's going to have something to do with it. Valero, it's like what you said. His chin is in the air, and we can't really tell if he can fight or not. But the thing is, he does seem like he has those magical hands. He's got those Roberto Duran hands where when he touches a guy, he goes to sleep. So until there's a fight where he hits a guy with the right hand or a left hook and the guy stands there and not goes down, we're not going to know exactly we're not really going to know how to call a fight against him. You see what I mean? It's kind of like how Tommy Hearns used to hurt everybody, but then when he hit Marvin Hagler with the right hand and Hagler kind of just kept coming, then you knew where the fight was going to go from there. So until we see Valero test it like that, and I don't know if Soto can test him because, like I said, I think Soto is a little bit smaller than he is. I don't know if he can take the power. I know he can punch back, but it's got to be fairly even, your chin versus his power, for there to be a fight, right?
Yeah, I got to agree with you on that. We got any other? Let's go in with some fight fans, man. We have any callers for some other fight fans that call in and want to get into the conversation of what we're talking about. We're talking about Edwin Valadio, the undefeated lightweight champion, the urban legend right now. This guy is a big myth around the boxing community. This guy is known to knock people out by just putting a thumb on them. Anybody got any takes about him and Soto? Am I the only guy that thinks Soto can pull it off?
Well, I believe we got future boxer and KG21 Carlito on the line. Are you there, Phyllis?
Yep. Yeah, I'm here. Future boxer's here.
Well, what's up, future man? What's your take about this fight?
Well, I'm with you, Dave. I'm going with Humberto Soto on this one. And I don't know, Valero's a really good fighter. His record speaks for himself, but I think he might get exposed on this. Really, when I see his record, there's really not a big name that I see except that last guy, Antonio Pacholura, whatever his name is. And Soto has fought, he's been there with some good guys like Rocky Juarez, Kevin Kelly, even if he lost to them. And really, even though he has like 7 losses, I never seen him knocked out. And, they're both young. So Soto is smart. I just think, he also has KO power. So I think Soto's going to take it to Valero. And we all know that Soto can go like, go all the distance and shit. I never seen Edwin Valero do that. So we'll see.
You think this might be Soto's strategy, because the longest rounds that Edward Velasquez has really fought, I think it was down to 10 rounds when he was fighting in Panama, where he was able to knock the guy out, able to come from behind. And Edward Velasquez was hurt in that match. He was fighting a guy that really was able to try to outbox him, maneuver him, but then would fall into the mindset of trying to brawl with him, and that's when Edward Velasquez was able to pick up the pace, literally systematically break this other man down, and then get the win over him. You think that could be what Humberto Soto may be trying to do? Take him to the deep end, see if this guy could really swim against the current. Any takers?
Well, that's got to be his plan, because otherwise he's going to lose. Humberto Soto, I would hope, in his training, is planning on going the distance, because anything else would be ludicrous.
If Soto was to come out, which I think he's gonna do, he's gonna come out slow. I don't know how he's really gonna. The thing is, I don't know how he'll take the punch. And I have a feeling as soon as he feels a right hand, I don't think he's gonna like the feeling of it. And I don't know how he's gonna come out. I don't know if he's gonna come out fast for the sake of making it out the first few rounds, or coming out slow, hoping Barlettl doesn't come out fast to survive the first few rounds. But if he somehow does it, then we could have a competitive fight. But I personally, honestly feel that this is not going to last more than a few seconds.
We got a lot of news, guys. We got a lot of news to cover. You know, I want to move along because we got a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening in boxing. A lot of interesting stuff, you know. We had Strikeheart call in today for Chris Namer Oriella's press conference, you know, and there's the report, Chris, saying on the press conference that he's 259 pounds, you know, and he's sparring 10 rounds in the camp, you know. I believe he had, what was the name of the guy that he has in there? Strikeheart, what's the name of the heavyweight that he has in there? It was one of his sparring partners, Lance Whitaker, big Lance Whitaker. Strikeheart, you had a chance to, yeah, Goofy, remember Goofy Lance Whitaker? You had a chance. Remember, he was called, what was it called? He was called Mount Lance Whitaker, and then he changed it to Goofy. Man, that's another story we've been right there. Strikeheart, go ahead, man. Tell us, what was your take? What happened? What were the questions? And what did you get off of it? And when is it going to get? Be on the website, www.thewillbebloodfightshow.com and standandfight.com.
Well, I plan on writing up something tonight and having it be on the website hopefully tomorrow. But as far as me being on the call, unfortunately, I was, like, driving at the same time. But my memory does serve me pretty well. So I'll tell you the questions I asked him. I'll also tell you some of the other things I found a little interesting. Funny story, when they called my name, they called for Jason Swartz of Leave It in the Ring. And I was like, Jason Swartz? Who the hell is Jason Swartz? So I was made an honorary Jew for the day, man. Jason Swartz, that was pretty funny. But yeah, so I had a chance to ask him what he thought of Eddie Chambers' career and why he decided to, you know, take a different route and not go over overseas, Europe, make a name for himself, you know, maybe make himself a mandatory challenger for somebody's belt. He basically just said he respects, you know, Eddie Chambers. He thinks that he's the best boxer in the United States. But as far as himself, he just wanted a chance, especially to win what he kept calling it, the green belt. He just wants that green belt, and he said, you know, as soon as he ever got a chance to fight for it, he was going to do that, no matter who had it. I also asked him about what chance he gave himself to knock Klitschko out. He obviously said he gives himself, you know, anybody can be knocked out is basically the route he took with that question. And I asked him, in the past, Klitschko has only really been injured to be beaten in a fight, whether it be his shoulder or his eye. So I asked him specifically, I said, you know, if you're able to stop Klitschko, is it going to be on an injury or is it going to be a knockout? At that point, he just said he predicts that he'll win the fight. He didn't really want to go down that road with me. And I asked a little bit of a fun question for my last question. I asked him if HBO had ever approached him at any point and asked him maybe to tone down his post-fight interviews a little bit. At that time, I don't know if it was his promoter or his trainer. I couldn't tell on the phone. But somebody jumped in there and told me, no, you know, everybody appreciates how natural he is when he speaks. And of course, we all do. He gives great interviews, but they're a little bit raw. And I don't know. Maybe HBO has talked to him about that, but we'll never know. So those are the questions I got to ask. Some of the other things I found interesting, some guys like Dan Rafael were on there from ESPN. They had Sports Illustrated on there, a bunch of people. But they asked him what he was doing, like what was he doing to cut his weight down and what he was doing for dieting. And his answer was the biggest thing that he's done is just stop drinking beer. And beyond that, he didn't really go much further than that. He said, I basically just stopped drinking beer, and that's what's been helping me to lose weight.
Well, man, you know what? I think someone needs to email him about drinking his own urine.
Because
that seems to work for one of our kids. You know, hey, man, I know when we say something, we get emails like crazy, or somebody gets upset. And this is all in fun. Whatever works. It works for, you know, it is what it is and stuff. But continue, brother. Go ahead.
So a lot of people, I would say 75% of the questions had to do with his weight. Everybody wanted to know what he was doing, if he was concerned about his weight. So he made the analogy that it's not like he has to be an athlete. It's not like he's running 2 miles. He said there's a difference between being able to run around the track and going 12 rounds in a boxing match. If that's how you feel, maybe, but not me. I think that
I don't feel like that at all. And me and David Chen have spoken about that. Remember that day? When Dave came down to California, we had sat there, and I told him, I was telling Dave, and I don't know, you know, Blood and Chris, I feel that the heavyweights have now really lost that, man, that, you know, movement. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. You know, using the footwork, using the jab, you know, being able to stick it out. I was watching, you know, when Larry Holmes fought Gary Cooney, and that fight was like a perfect picture of what a heavyweight was supposed to do with a jab. He was able to stick it out there, time, and drop the right hand whenever he needed to drop, you know, to keep the guy at bay, to keep him humble, to keep him understanding you're fighting a champion, you're fighting an elite fighter, you're fighting an athlete. Blood, what do you think about these heavyweights at this moment, you know, where the athleticism is no longer really there? They're trying to give what the people want, which is a knockout, which is great, but the gracefulness of the fighter is no longer there.
I don't know if it's the amateur backgrounds or what, but there isn't very many technicians in the heavyweight division, and that's what the heavyweight division is lacking, a good technician. You know, I don't know if it's just because these guys are going for the knockouts. A lot of these heavyweights come in there looking overweight, like they just left the buffet or something, you know. So, I mean, it just doesn't seem like there's anybody out there that's making the rest of the heavyweights say, hey, I need to step up now, you know. And I think it's going to take somebody technically sound to beat these Klitschko guys, because the Klitschko guys are, you know, they don't float like a butterfly and sting like a bee, but they're pretty technically sound, man. You can't come in there just swinging some haymakers and think you're going to beat these Klitschko's, man. It's not going to happen, because these guys are working on their boxing skills, and they have both become better boxers over the past 10 years. I think everybody would agree with that.
You know what's funny? Because a lot of trainers, the old school trainers, would say, hey, give me a basketball player, and I can teach him how to fight. This past weekend, you know, you had Oscar De La Hoya step in the ring with Shaq, and Shaq fought Oliver McCall. And I was watching Shaq's footwork. He was able to do the Hollywood, you know. He was able to, you know, hit and switch. He was able to go south and, you know, orthodox and conventional stance. As a big man, this guy was really light in his feet. Why are we not seeing these heavyweights do that? Throw a ball, man. Let them play some basketball. Let's see what they could do on the court. You know, I don't watch basketball, and I don't watch football, and I don't watch baseball. But if it's going to help them be a little bit more light on their feet so they can give us an entertaining fight or even put back an American back in the contingency of the heavyweight, throw them a basketball.
I mean, even Lennox Lewis was technically a sound heavyweight. You know, he's technically sound, and I think that's the key to success in the heavyweight division. Heavyweights like Larry Holmes, man, they just don't build them guys like that no more. A young Larry Holmes in his prime would have been hell for them Klitschko brothers just because of his technical abilities, man. He would have went in there and he would have used the jab, not really tried to probably outpoint them guys pretty easy.
And, you know, Vitelli is an athlete. We got to say he is an athlete. He's a chisel guy. He has an educated jab. He's got a great down-the-pipe magnet straight right. And to hear Chris say, you know, which, you know, we've had Chris. We like Chris. Chris is a great guy. Had a chance to just, you know, talk to. We've all had a chance to talk to Chris. Gives great interviews, but I'm a little concerned here when he's saying, you know, I don't have to run 2 miles. I don't have to do this. You know, me and Dave Chen, we spoke about this. You know, and we spoke to, you know, quite some time about this particular fight, about the strategies, about what he needs to do. And I'm thinking the strategy of going in there against this big mountain of man is to make this man spend a lot of energy in the ring, and that would mean that you would have to do a little bit of dancing. Make this guy move a little bit more than what he would want to do, you know? Make him jab a lot more than what he was anticipating to do. Make him throw the right hand at the wind, you know, because we, as we know, these big men don't throw 4, 5, or 6 punch combinations.
It's going to take a technically sound fighter. I mean, that's the only reason Chris Bird had success in the heavyweight division, because he's more technically sound. And, you know, even James Toney, as small as he is, has had some success in the heavyweight division because of, you know, too bad he didn't get there 10 years younger. He didn't have the size. But, you know, I think it's going to take a technically sound heavyweight to beat the Klitschko brothers. You know, I love Chris Arreola, but I just don't think he's going to have what it takes, man.
Most big athletic guys are in football and basketball. I mean, imagine LeBron James, 6'8 with a reach, who can run like a deer. Imagine him if he would have been trained as an amateur. Imagine him with that reach and with that speed. I just think that's the main problem, is a lot of the athletes, they see what's on TV, and it's football, baseball, and basketball, and I just think a lot of people, it's safer to go there. Not that it's not hard to play football, but it's better than get your head pounded in. And so I think they see guaranteed contracts in a lot of these sports. I just think it's popularity, too, and the big boy athletes, Ray Lewis, Sean Taylor, rest in peace. A lot of these guys that are 6'3", 6'5", 6'7", big boys that can move. I just look at it. LeBron James is where our American heavyweight is. Imagine him in the ring. That's where our heavyweights are.
I believe a champion is born and not made. So one day he'll come. He'll come.
No, that's true, too. You're right. But, you know, if you have more people being in the amateurs and boxing a bigger thing, you know, it just helps out. And a lot of our athletes that are that size are in more popular sports. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're right. The champions are born and not made. But you also got to find them. MIA champions out there. They're missing in action, and we need them. And one of them is, you know, we need to start programs. We're going to get away a little bit of what we were talking about, Kristen Imer or Yellow, but the United States needs to come up with good programs that would bring back an interest for these young guys to say, man, I want to be a heavyweight champion of the world. You know, Bloodhead did a video blog just last week talking about Muhammad Ali and the influence Muhammad Ali did for a lot of young African-Americans, and not even just African-Americans, Latinos and whites, to make them want to put on gloves, make them want to go to the gym, make them pretend that they were Ali in the ring. That is exactly what we need, is programs. Programs to influence these kids to say, hey, I want to get a shot. I want to see what it is to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
But somebody has to set the example, though, man. You know, there needs to be one heavyweight to break the barrier and set the example, because that's where boxing was in the past. Boxing always looked at the heavyweight as the main man, you know, in boxing. And it hasn't been that way for a long time now. And what they need is a good role model, somebody who could go out there and show them that, hey, you could be successful in the ring. It ain't, you know, this could bring you a lot of accolades, because that's what they're looking at, man. You know, they're looking at LeBron James and them and seeing them in the nice, fancy cars and saying, yo, that's what I want to be right there. And they don't see that in boxing, you know. A lot of ghetto kids and kids from the hood, they're not going to look up to Klitschko. It's just how it is, man. You know, they can't relate to the doctors, you know. So that's just how it is, man.
You know, but, you know, role models don't come from – they have to start somewhere. And normally where role models come from is from a father figure. You think about heavyweights like, you know, like I said, Muhammad Ali or Joe Frazier or all these other guys. Yeah, they have Jack Johnson. They have, you know, other fighters out there to influence them to go into the ring. But they had to start somewhere too. And this goes back into the traditional gyms. You had the old wise guy in there, the guy that had been in the game since – you don't know when. The guy that really rarely even cracked a smile. The guy that rarely even said three words, but was there to influence you, motivate you, put that extra oomph into your soul where you felt the only way to be great was to be in the gym 24/7 and to work on your craft. And I think that's what we're lacking out of gyms. A lot of these trainers are trying to be superstars themselves. Looking for the fast way of making their money. I really do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the fact that it's not on normal TV hurts it too, because all those great heavyweights and great boxers in general, I mean, Hagler and Hearns, guys that were middleweights and welterweights too, they were getting a lot of attention and people were looking up to them, but it's not on ABC Wide World of Sports at 2:30 in the afternoon anymore. I think that hurts boxing, and when ratings are down, funding is down, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. We're going to have Jesus Chavez, the Matador, and we're having David Diaz on with us. And really, Dave Chen, please keep an eye out on the switchboard, you know, on the panel for them, because we're having one of our guest callers call in at 6 o'clock. They're going to be discussing about their upcoming fight September 26th at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago. It's a big fight for Chicago, man. If you're living in Chicago, I think this is a fight that's going to be salivating, because it has, in a lot of ways, the ingredients of the making of a Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti fight. Two guys are going to come in, go forward, throw a lot of punches, and it's going to be a bloody war. It's an exciting fight, man. So, Dave, just make sure that our guest caller has not called in at this moment. You know, maybe check out the numbers that are there that are not recognizable and patch them on through.
It's all good, man. Just us right now.
So, Blood, you were going to say something about this, you know, missing an action champion for the American heavyweight. You know, it's a discussion we've had, you know, before on Leaving in the Ring, you know. But I thought, like I said, it kind of cemented a little bit more what we had kind of mentioned, saying that a lot of these heavyweights to put that extra spark of interest so they would want to lace up the gloves, you know. And in a lot of ways, I'm going to play basketball. They kind of killed it for the heavyweight, you know, future kids.
Yes, sir. Sir, I agree. You know, that's where it's at. The bigger guys, they want to play basketball and they want to play football. You know, I even mentioned that in the earlier video too. You know, that's why so many of the heavyweights that are more successful are coming from overseas now. And, you know, I think it robbed us of a lot of talent in the heavyweight division. And then, you know, bad politics too, you know, and not getting a chance to see the fights on TV like Carlito
yep.
just mentioned.
Yep.
You know, the politics have been bad. There's four heavyweight champions sometimes, you know, I mean, that doesn't really motivate any children.
Well, a lot of people, like even right now with Chris Carlson, Carlitos, from the Ropadope Report, had mentioned that the success for you becoming a football player and basketball player is obviously seems to be greater for these kids. That's how they look at it. They look at it like this, you know, how the way the media kind of shines it around, polishes it for these kids, is that it's going to be a little bit greater. And a lot of honesty, I don't know how you guys, I feel the fruits of being a heavyweight champ of the world is even more greater, you know, because you're actually considered a king.
It is.
Sir Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet. The baddest man on the planet, and guess what? He's still being praised to this day. You know, the thing about this, I've had this discussion with other people that are you know, football fans, baseball fans, and I, you know, or base, or even baseball, because baseball players are signed to these major crazy deals. And I say, they'll go like, oh, but he signed a $30 million deal. And I said, but how many seasons does he need to play? Well, you can have a fighter literally fight for $30 million maybe 2-3 times out of the year, and he's done.
Yeah, that's true. The mainstream does love the heavyweights, too, so that popularity could jump up real quick for boxing. And I actually did a video about this with Areola. Let's say, even though I have Vitaly win, and I said, well, let's just say, just in theory, if Areola won, being that his fan base in L.A. would be humongous in such a big city across the world in America, such a fan-friendly place to fight. And yeah, I mean, mainstream, that would. I think you're right, Ruff, when you say that it would. Like, you're the man. There's something about being the king. You know, you are the king when you're the heavyweight. And maybe we haven't felt that in this country for a while because it hasn't been here. But I think that would help a lot if a heavyweight would come along, and obviously Areola or somebody, you know, who knows or who cares who it is, just somebody would come along and grab that title. It would bring boxing back into the mainstream a lot more.
Yeah,
but,
it goes back to what I was saying. They need an example. I mean, we haven't had a good American heavyweight since Mike Tyson and Holyfield and Riddick Bowe were younger guys. That's how long it's been, and that was a long damn time ago. So nobody's motivated. Nobody has a role model, and nobody's going to look up to these Klitschko guys, man. I mean, you know, they're good fighters, man, but how can you relate to somebody who's from overseas who has a doctorate degree? You know, it's just, you know, they barely even speak English, you know? So
well, they don't fight here anymore either.
I think,
youth are not going to relate to Klitschko. They're just not going to.
I think a lot of it is that when you look at becoming heavyweight champion, it's not an easy road. You're fighting big men. You're fighting guys who hit really hard. This is not going down a court and putting a ball in a basket. This is not hitting a ball halfway down the field. You know, this is months away from your family. You know, you're in the gym and you're gonna bleed. You're gonna get cut. Your bones are gonna break. You know, you're just gonna suffer. It's suffering for glory. And a lot of kids don't want to do this, and that's where I really feel where a champion is born and not made, because some one day a kid's going to be born, and he's going to be like, I can't take this shit anymore. You know, I need to do something for my country so I can inspire people. Hopefully that kid comes along.
Hold on a second, guys. People. Sorry for cutting in, but I got a number popping up from the area code 773. I'm wondering if it's one of our guests.
Yeah, yes, it is. Hello?
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, David Diaz.
David Diaz, what's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
Pretty good here, listening to your conversation.
Listen over here, us talking, complaining about the heavyweight division, huh, brother?
Yeah, it's a good thing we don't got that problem in the lightweight division.
You know what? You're right, but we've never had that problem in the lightweight division for, you know, years and years and years. Let me ask you something, Dave, because, you know, you're a guy that comes from the Olympics. You came in from the training camps, the programs themselves, man. When you look at the heavyweight division, now, before we get into the interview, you've got a great fight coming up December 26th. You're going to be fighting Jesus Chavez, another Chicago guy, another guy that comes to fight. But when you look at all this heavyweight stuff, man, and you just sit there, what kind of thoughts are you going through, man, as a fighter? What is there out really that you feel that the programs no longer are pushing?
Well, I mean, we get down to it as that some of the fighters just don't carry that toughness or that ability of wanting to fight. You know, before, like you used to see Mike Tyson train. Now he trained. He trained hard, you know, and that's what I think. I'm not saying that they don't, but I'm just saying they need to show that in the ring more to get everybody, you know, back again in the crowd to loving the heavyweights.
In a way, Dave, do you feel that maybe society has got a little soft? Maybe the mentality, man, it's not even there, you know, with the heavyweights where you see that, you know, okay, the big guys, when we go back and talk about the big guys, they see the baseball players, the guys are big. You see the football players, the guys are big. You see the basketball guys. These are guys that right now are just, they're more into the flamboyant, pretty boy look. They're not into that grit of being possible the lion, you know, the king of the lion, you know, the Lion King.
Right. Well, I mean, could it be? I mean, those are some pretty mean-looking guys that are up there in the heavyweight division. I mean, but I don't know. I don't think I just think it's more of their way of training, or maybe their what they have inside of if they're really in love with the sport. You know, who's to know that they come up sometimes and don't put on the good fights that people want to see.
Speaking of hard training, Dave, how is training camp going for you? Are you sticking around in the hometown there, or are you, you know, going away so that you're in the best condition for this fight?
No, we're staying home. We've been working really hard, and we feel that staying home at this particular time is the best route to go. And my camp's been great. I've been feeling good, working out hard, and putting the grind back into it because we want to be champion again. So I felt that love as being a champion. And, you know, there's more love when you're a champion than when you're not. So I want to feel that love again.
Why did you take this fight, Dave? I mean, why go against Jesus Chavez? How did this come about? I mean, what was the works? What was the talk? Was this the first name that was picked out of the hat, or did you have other options, or did you just feel, you know what, I owe this to Chicago. I owe the fans at home, you know, a good fight.
Well, I mean, that's something I always try to do is give the best fight out there. And in order for me to try to even come back and say I want to fight the best, or I want to fight good fighters, and then take on, you know, someone who's up and coming or nobody, that wouldn't be fair to myself or to the people that I represent, which is Chicago. So when Jesus, when we found out that Jesus wanted to fight here in Chicago, we're like, hey, man, you know what? We could do this. And he was all for it. And it's like he said in our press conference, it's going to be a little family feud. That's all it is, just for about half an hour. And we're going to take it from there.
When you say family feud, is there any bad blood between you guys? I mean, or is this more friendship? Is this like, you know, I'm anticipating this bout first off to be another version of Gotti versus Ward. Two guys, you guys are both known to come in there and throw a lot of punches. You guys are both known not to take a step backwards. You guys are both known to just go on and get in there and mix it up and give a good fight.
No, definitely. There's no bad blood. I know his brother. I know his brother actually more than I know Jesus. When Jesus was doing his thing, that's how we found out how Jesus was doing. He was doing okay for the fight, you know, through his brother Jimmy Sandoval. So there's no bad blood. We're just good friends, and we're just going to get it on on the 26th and have a great show for the people here in Chicago.
Hey, Dave, you know, we're finding out, we always find out something new, something that always surprises the fight fans and hardcore fight fans like myself, man, of things that fighters do or events that happen in the game. One thing that we found out is a boxing regimen. I'm wondering about your regimen. I don't know if you heard about Juan Manuel Marquez drinking his own urine. Did you hear about that, man? I mean, what is your thoughts about that? And are you doing any crazy regimen like that, man?
No, nothing like that. I mean, if that works for Juan Manuel Marquez, I think, you know, the mind's a very powerful thing. And if that works for him, then, you know, God bless him, drink away and let him go do what he does, because that's, in his mind, he thinks he's doing the right thing. No, I get my vitamins from GNC, and that's it. I get them from GNC, pay like $34 for a bottle. That's about it. But other than that, I don't do no crazy things like that. Rituals would be another thing. Everybody has rituals they do before a fight and stuff like that. But to go to that extreme, no, I'm pretty. I don't think my wife would kiss me if I would do something like that.
I was thinking the same thing, you know. I mean, I'm Mexican American. Obviously, my grandpas, my abuelitos, they would have certain rituals, you know. For instance, like, you know, I would bump my head, and when you get that little bubble in the head, you know, a bruise in the head, my grandmother would suck on it, right? And they put sugar.
Yeah, well, I mean, my mother puts honey on it, so go figure, you know. I mean, it's just certain things that you know, we as a culture, as Mexicans, have, you know, certain things that, you know, my dad told me, oh, there's a tree out there in the hills that when an animal gets sick and he breaks his leg, it's called pega hueso, and they put it on him and he gets healed. I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, it's stuff that they bring back to us. So, you know, I mean, like I said, if it works for Juan Manuel Marquez, in his mind he thinks it's working for him, then I mean, drink away and hopefully it helps him. I mean, who knows, you know? But no, I would never try something like that.
You know, and obviously it's been working for him, you know? Let's get down with your regimens, though, brother. What are some of the things that you do to get yourself prepared, especially for this fight coming up? You know it's going to be a high-value fight. What are some of the things that you're working on at this moment?
At this moment, we're still working on it. We'll work on to the day before the fight. We'll be conditioning because that's what we're going to need for this fight. We need to throw volumes of punches, be in great shape, and be there to meet his punches and receive and give him some, you know, because we got to make him go back. And if we could do that, I think we'll be on our way to a good fight and maybe even a victory, God willing.
You're giving what kind of prediction, man, do you think you're going to have on this one? What prediction are you hoping? A knockout? Or just outpoint Jesus?
I'm going out there to give the best that I can. We're not going to be looking for a knockout. It's been a year and 15 months since I fought. And, you know, we just want to get our feet wet again. And if it goes the distance, it goes the distance. But if it doesn't, then, you know, we're not going to be looking for it. But we are going to be going in there expecting a hard fight.
I'm gonna turn over the interview real quick. We got five guys on the panel that are hosts with me along with me. We got, you know, David Chan, we got Chris, we also got Blood, and we got Justin Strikehart. So I'm gonna give it to Blood real quick, and if he's got any questions for you, brother.
All right. Yeah, bro. I just wanted to know when you're training if you've been drinking any urine, brother. You know, just to keep it good. You know what I'm saying?
No, man. Like I told my man, I get my vitamins through GNC, man, and that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just had to throw that one in there, man.
Yeah,
but,
no, that's good. That's good. Yeah, no, GNC's my brand. Mega Man Sport, just in case anybody wants to know.
Hey, man, after the loss to Pacquiao, man, did you go back to the drawing board and working on some different things? Or what do you think that loss did for you? Do you think that bettered you? Made you more hungry again, or you know?
Definitely, it made me more hungry. You know, I mean,
because you seem to have some problems with the speed,
Yeah, I mean, and that was the deciding factor. See, I went into that fight thinking, hey, I fought Zeb Judah, I fought all these other guys that were fast, you know. So I'm like, this is not going to be a problem. This is, if anything, I was worried more about his power than his speed, you know?
Right.
And in the fight, I was like, what the flowers is going on here, man? You know? I mean, this
right.
guy is, he's, I don't know if I can swear or not, but in the
you
fight,
swear,
I was
brother.
Swearing, man. I was swearing. I was like, man, what the fuck is going on, man? This motherfucker is too fast, you know?
Yeah.
And I went back to the corner. I told him, I was like, man, his power is not a problem.
Right, right. I remember hearing you say that.
That's not a problem. It's his speed. His speed was giving me the problems.
Dave, let me ask you this, though, man. Watching, you know, getting with Manny Pacquiao, how good did you feel, though, knowing you got in with this guy that's considered pound-for-pound king, okay? And you gave him a lot for his money. You were fighting him. You're, you know, taking everything he had. But when you see Ricky Hatt and Oscar De La Hoya lose this man a lot faster than you losing him, do you walk away saying, damn, man, you know what? I got a really good chin.
Well, I mean, you walk away saying, okay, I did better than these guys.
Right.
But there's no consolation prize. You know what I'm saying? I mean, from the way I look at it, I mean, I still didn't hit the lotto. You know, I missed it by one number or by what was it, four? And you know, and it still comes down to the point that we lost that fight and we got knocked out. And you know, if he beats Cotto, he beats Cotto, and then, you know, I want to try to get up there and see if I could get another shot. If, you know, because that's been my out of the two fights that I have had that I've lost, that's been the one that stuck with me, and then I would like to see if we could do another dance.
Blood, you got another question for my man here, Dave Diaz?
Nah, that's pretty much about it for me.
Strike card. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead and ask your question.
You had just mentioned earlier that you had fought Zab Judah, correct?
Yes. Yes.
But that was in the amateurs, not in the professionals.
Exactly, and then that's why I felt that you know, in the amateurs, it's more about speed.
Right.
It's more about, you know, getting your punches in and getting out and that movement and all that stuff. So I figured, you know, I fought this guy who's fast. I've done pretty good with the guys that are fast. So I guess I sidestepped his speed and started concentrating about his power. Well, let's see if he hits hard. And that was more in my mind than his speed was. And you know, it just happens in those fights that sometimes you get the unexpected. And I ended up, you know, with the lost.
Yeah. Something I'm just a little bit curious about. So indulge me. Is Zab Judah, like, was he the same back then as he is today? Did he carry himself the same way? Is he the same crazy guy?
You know what? Actually, he was not. He was not. I think Judah was more of a approachable person as a fighter and as just a person in the amateurs. Because we actually, after our two fights and stuff, three fights I think we had, we were able to talk pretty cool and not a problem, you know. The way he's been through the professionals, I mean, you know, only he knows why he's done some of the things that he's done and stuff. But he was very approachable. I mean, like even Floyd, like people say, oh, Floyd's this and that. I'm like, man, the Floyd I knew was a good person, nice guy, easy guy to talk to. So, you know,
How much of that, Dave, do you think, though? I mean, do you think really, truly, I mean, what you knew of Floyd, you know, because if I remember correctly, you guys were stable mates, right, at one
right,
point?
Exactly. Yes.
And how much do you think, really, is this the persona that he created? You know, this is not the Floyd Mayweather. And if you ran into Floyd, you would see the same guy that was your stable mate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he's done a lot as well. So he's got a lot, I think, of pride in his work, of what he's accomplished. And you can't take that away from him. He's just a guy who's done it on his own, sort of, you know, without a father, without somebody to, you know, to guide him. He's done it on his own, so maybe in that aspect he feels that he deserves to show off like the way he does, you know.
Would you, if you and would you, if you had the opportunity was there to grab, would you fight your stablemate?
Would I fight Floyd? Yeah, I mean, everybody, I mean, this is the business we're in. Just like he knows, this is, I mean, it's never personal for me. It's always about business. This is the sport that we're making our living off of. And we got to go out there and first and foremost please the fans who are the ones who want to see fights like that. And if they want a fight like that to fight, I'm here to back away from no one. Whoever they put in the ring, is who I got to go and fight.
Chris916, brother, go ahead out of Sacramento. Ask your question to David Diaz.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. First off, David, is this the longest layoff you've had? Because you've been out of the ring for like a little over a year now, right?
Yeah, no, I had a little bit longer when I took my 2 years of absence from the sport of boxing to really find myself and see if I wanted to fight again, because after I had came back from Miami, I stopped boxing. I did like two fights here and there, but I wasn't really into it, and I just did it to do it, and I took 2 years off and then came back. This year layoff was because my manager told me, he's like, you know what, it was a hard fight. We've been fighting hard for 4 years nonstop. I want you to take a break. And during that break, it was only supposed to be like a 3 month thing, you know, a 3 month vacation. But it ended up being longer because I ended up having a cartilage in my knee, so I need an operation, go through rehab. Then I went to the Philippines, came back, and messed up my knee again, so I had to do some rehab again. So that's mainly the reason I was off for so long.
Do you think that, I mean, obviously, injuries aside, obviously, that's not something anybody wants to deal with, but do you think that's a positive or a negative that you've had all this time off? I mean, obviously, you know, you want to be in there, but also you gave your chance a lot of body to, or you gave your body a lot of time to rest. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm a big believer in getting rest, and you have to have your rest, and I did that. I didn't go crazy. I didn't, you know, do bad with my body. I did okay, and I recuperated myself to where I feel that I'm at 100% with my knee and getting to be 100% fighting weight by the time we get to fight.
All right, I got one last one. You know, you're a young guy. I mean, you're younger than I am, and you only have two losses. You don't have, like, a plethora of fights. I mean, you have a good a lot of fights, but not, like, you know, 100 fights or anything. But a lot of people in the press, or I just heard a lot of people saying after that last fight that you should retire. And I don't know
yeah.
if it's because of the way it ended, or I don't understand, because there's no indications leading up to that fight where I thought that you looked like you needed to retire. Your career was winding down to an end. So what do you think? Why do you think people are saying that, and what's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, people, like, I love this country, so it's a free world, the country we live in, so they can say whatever they want. It really doesn't bother me one bit. The person who's going to make the decision to continue fighting is going to be myself, and obviously I've talked with my wife and my parents, and we've always had an understanding that the day that I'm in it for too long is, and that I'm trying to keep on and trying to reach something that I can't, and they can see it and I can't, I want them to tell me that. And we have that understanding that they won't let me go to that extreme of trying to be that fighter that wants to get to the glory road and doesn't have a chance in hell to make it. And I'm thinking that I do. And I want my family to step in and tell me, you know what, David, start to hang them up.
So, but do you use, I mean, because obviously you've heard, you know, what people have said. Is that kind of a tool for, I mean, maybe not directly, but is that motivation when you're in the gym training?
Oh, I mean, like I said, I don't pay no mind to what people say. People are going to say what they want. But it's I motivate myself in wanting to do right and trying to get more money so I could, you know, leave my kids in a good situation, a financial situation. So this is why I do this boxing. I mean, I do it to establish a good, you know, future for my kids. I mean, my future is now. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I love boxing. And if my kids don't have to do what I do, then I'm going to keep on doing this until I can't do it no more.
We got to give a real quick plug. You know, Dominic, the promoter from 8 Count Promotions, if you are in Chicago and you want to see this fight, I think this is going to be a great matchup between the both of you guys. Like I said, I see a Ward Gotti all over again. Two guys that move forward, two guys going to throw a lot of punches. It's going to be at the UIC Pavilion, September 26th. Okay, you can go to therewillbebloodfightshow.com or standandfight.com so that you can look it up and purchase some tickets. Go to the website, support both guys. You know, like I said, it's going to be a great match. It's going to be a great night on a Saturday night at September 26th between David Diaz and Jesus the Manador Chavez. David Chen, go ahead, brother. Also, Dave, make sure we don't have Jesus Chavez because we're going to have him also on the line, Dave. I don't know if you're aware of that. We're going to have him also at the same time.
Yeah.
If we can chop it up with both you guys and see what's going on between the both of you guys. Dave Chen, go ahead and ask your question, brother.
Yeah, man, I got my eye on the switchboard, no problem. And, Dave, I want to wish you good luck on your fight, of course.
Thank you.
Now, I've always wondered about this because you're a Latino, you know, fighter, but you came up in Chicago and your demeanor, your personality is more or less of a normal American city fighter. Do you have a unique experience you feel as a fighter, as a Latino American fighter?
Yeah, I mean, I get this a lot from the guys from California. Like they like Fernando Vargas is a good friend of mine. Shout out to him if he's listening. He always would say, he's like, there's no Mexicans in Chicago, man. You know, so he thought all the Mexicans were over there in California. It was not until I think we were around here in Chicago for the Olympics training camp or whatever. We had a sleepover here in Chicago. So he came out to the city and he's like, oh, my God. He's like, there's a lot of Mexicans out here. I was like, dude, what do you think? I mean, like, I know my people are out here. We're all over the place. So I mean, I have a big Hispanic Mexican background, man. I eat my tortillas, my chile, everything. So everything is Mexican in my life. Back to like what my parents taught me is what I'm hoping to teach my kids.
Dave, do you speak Spanish? I mean, you know,
oh, yeah.
Like when you know, because when I mean. I'm pretty sure a lot of people have looked at you and say, like, because, you know, you're that's blanco, you know, you're a little lighter, you know.
Yeah.
It may be because it snows in Chicago. Maybe that's why they don't feel a lot of Mexicans don't think there's anybody over there.
Yeah, they don't get brown. We don't get brown. No, I'm actually, me and my sister are the lightest ones in the family, my older sister. I got a sister who's pretty dark. The rest of my family are pretty tan. I'm the lightest, the second lightest in my family. But yeah, I speak Spanish. I told you, man. Over here in Chicago, we have our own little village. We call it Little Village, and it's where you know, a lot of Mexicans in the city live. And you know, over there we have arrachera, everything. We have it here, brother. Believe me, you guys should come out here one time and check it out. You guys will be surprised.
Man, I got to go down there. You know, my great-grandfather is originally from Chicago. He was born there. And then he came down. He used to drive the trains. He used to ride the trains.
Okay.
He used to jump on the trains. He used to ride them. And he used to like to go all the way. But he's originally from Chicago. He was born in Chicago, but then left. And then he made it out to California. But then he decided to go back to Mexico, where his family originally are from. My grandparents are from the DF. You know, and then it just... You know, it just went from there, you know. But go ahead, Dave, share with your any more questions for David Diaz, brother.
Another quick question, Dave. I just want to know your experience with this issue. Basically, you were on HBO in your last fight against Manny Pacquiao, and just, you know, you lost that even though you don't have any fights on your record. You only got two losses, and both of them are extremely reasonable losses. So have you, in your experience, have anything to do, you know, for example, it's hard to get back onto the big stage again, so on and so forth, you know, people discrediting you after the Manny Pacquiao fight, you know, things like that, you know, basically fighters not being able to get a good shake, you know, losing an opportunity just off something like that. Have you had any personal experience with any of this?
No, well, see, I mean, the what Manny Pacquiao is doing and beating De La Hoya, beating Haddon, it's actually making me get into people's heads and be like, wow, David Diaz did better than these two, and these guys are good. So is it helping me? Yeah, it is. I feel that people are giving more props. Man, you did better than these two guys who are supposed to be better and stuff like that. So, I mean, am I going to get the big shot again? That's why I got to work at it, you know. And the way to get back up there again is fighting guys like who are former world champions like Jesus Chavez, who come out there to fight and not just play around. So I mean, this fight is it's a very important fight. It's a very important step in the direction of trying to get a world title.
Is Jesus Chavez, in your opinion, because, you know, if you surf around, you hear other sports writers, they're saying, you know, it's always been, you know, everybody is divided. Could be a shell of himself. Are you looking at him like that, or are you looking for him to be the best that night?
Man, he's coming back to Chicago. He's got a lot of family and friends out here. I don't have not one inch of doubt in my mind that he's going to come prepared and ready to throw down and give the Chicago fans, a fight they'll remember. And I got to prepare myself to meet that and meet the guy that had balls to fight Eric Morales with one hand, you know. And
right.
that's the type of fighter I'm going to meet on the 26th. That's what I'm thinking in my mind. A guy that's not going to give up. Will I hit him with the kitchen sink or try to hit him with a baseball bat? You know, that guy there, that fight was determined to go all out. And that's the type of fighter that we're going to get, I think, on the 26th. And that's what we're preparing ourselves to fight.
Dave, is this a crossroad fight for you, in your opinion? Do you feel if I lose to Jesus Chavez, that's it? Maybe I should just hang him up.
I don't know. I'll tell you after the fight. I don't know. I mean, those are thoughts that are not going through my mind right now. I'm really not looking at it that way. Like I said before, I'm 33 years old. I consider myself young, good, feel my body still responding well to the training. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I'll let you know about that about 11 o'clock Chicago time.
September 26th at UIC Chicago Pavilion. Fight with Jesus Chavez, David Diaz. We got David Diaz on the line. We're waiting for Jesus to call in. Dave, I don't know if he's called in. If he hasn't called in yet, if he's not online yet, Dave, let's patch in some fight fans, man. Let's see if any fight fans out there have any questions for David Diaz here.
Not a problem.
We got Carlito. Go ahead, Carlito.
Yeah, thanks. First of all, David, I want to say me and my brother and my dad are watching that Pacquiao fight, and the interview that you gave after was just honest and great. It made us laugh. It made us just respect you that much more, so I definitely want to give you some props on that, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I was just
really, really
hard. Trying to be a hard Chicago and, like, you know, hey, nothing happened, guys. Nothing happened.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But it was honest, and at the same time, it was funny, too. You know what I mean? You had a good spirit after a loss. And I'm just going to ask you two quick questions. First, one will be about a great win you had, and one will be about a tough loss you had. That first loss to Kendall Holt, what was it like after that fight, like as far as getting back into training and just your mindset? How hard was that, and did you learn something off that? Just tell me a little bit about how that whole experience shaped you after that.
Well, that was a learning process. I mean, in that fight, we wanted to go and stop Kendall Holt. So I wasn't even listening to my corner at all. I was just like, you know what? I'm taking it to him, and that's it. I'm taking it to him. So, I mean, he caught me in the first round, which was, you know, not a problem. Got back up, and we started getting grinded and grinding it out. And I was just headstrong. I'm going to take it to him. I'm going to take it to him. And we started wearing them down. And I believe it was in the seventh round that I knocked him down and with a body shot. And I knew he was getting ready to fold up. So I was like, in the eighth round, I'm going to go and I'm going to attack him. And he just caught me with a nice right that snapped my head back, did not daze me, but I was still throwing punches. And the referee started in a different way, and that's just the way the story goes, man. I mean, that's just the way it ended.
Hold on, guys.
And then
cut in real quick because I see a number from the Erico 512. I'm wondering if this is not the Matador Jesus Chavez.
Hey, Seuss, are you in the line, brother?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Seuss, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well. Who do I have the pleasure with?
You're speaking to Dave Duenas from Leaving in the Ring, with also with Marlon Jordan, a.k.a. Blood, David Chan, Chris, and Justin Streichhardt. First off, man, are you staying in Chicago to train as well as David Diaz here, or are you, you know, at another spot?
No, I'm in Austin, Texas.
That's right, in Texas, and you're not, and you're going back to Chicago, because that's where kind of more or less you grew up at, right?
Yeah, that's where I saw my good years in amateur boxing.
In amateur boxing, Dave and Jesus, did you guys ever come across each other, or were you guys in different weight classes?
No, I think that
he was older.
I was 3 years older. Matter of fact, yes, I was probably heavier and possibly in either junior or novice, or either novice or open, one of the two. But I think we hit in age, so yeah.
I don't know, is that somebody's connection, or is it a Jesus connection where it's cracking you really bad?
I don't know, it might be mine, guys.
Really, really.
It might be mine. You guys want me to hang up and I'll call you back?
Tuesday, Dave, like, just hang up, call right back so maybe we can clear up and all that, because we can hear his voice a little bit better.
All right, I'll call back.
Great. Who was that just hang up?
That was David Diaz, I believe. He's going to call right back, Jesus. This fight here with David Diaz, man, I was talking about it a little earlier, and I was saying, to me, it seems like it's going to be another version of Gotti and Ward. You guys are both known to come forward. You guys are both known to come and fight every time out. Why take such a dangerous fight right now?
I think the fight is meant to be the way it came down. Now, you know, the fight is going to be the fight that it's going to be. But I do have a question. It's like, who is going to broadcast this fight? I mean, you know, it's a question legitimate question. You know, it's a great fight. Two fantastic fighters from Chicago, in Chicago. You compared it to Guy Ward, and there's no TV space for it.
Why is that, Jesus? I mean, that's got to be a little frustrating.
No, it's not frustrating. It's not frustrating. The fight's going to be the fight, and nothing is going to change how David and I fight the fight. It's just, I think that a lot of people are going to wonder about that. But that's okay.
I'm not
my main concern.
Let me ask you this, though. Let me ask you this. With the promoter, 8 Count, who is going to be at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago, is he going to be filming it? I mean, is there going to be a way? Because to me, it just seems like this fight is going to be, it's kind of restricting hardcore fight fans like myself, where I want to watch it. I want to see this fight, you know, and it doesn't seem like it'd be fair not to be able to see this fight. Would it be streamed? Have you talked to the promoters where, could it be streamed somewhere maybe?
That's going to be a question for 8 Count.
Who's the favorite man in Chicago at this moment, Jesus? Is it you or is it Dave?
I don't think that there's really a favorite when it comes down to fighting in Chicago. See, the main thing about this fight is that there hasn't been a fight this big in a long time in Chicago, Illinois. To see two of the former world champions that have come out of Chicago, the only two in probably the last decade to come together and make a fight night. So I think that's going to be something that everybody's looking forward to in Chicago, and I think that the crowd is going to be practically divided.
Ticket sales are got to be great for this fight in Chicago. This is a great gift, first off, that you guys, both you gentlemen, are giving, you know, Chicago right now. how psyched up are you? I mean, what exactly are the regimens that you're doing right now to be up to par to fight David Diaz? David Diaz has been laid off, you know, he hasn't been in the ring. The last time you were in the ring, you know, was not that long ago, so you're a lot more consistent at this moment.
I'm not doing anything that I haven't done in the past that's different for this coming fight, other than the fact that I am completely psyched for the fight because I've never fought in Chicago as a pro. I'm coming back to fight not only a great Chicago fighter, but also a great friend. But like I said before, I mean, he and I are really good friends. And once the bell rings, there's no love in the glove, baby.
That's true. There is no love in the gloves. You know, Jesus, any predictions, man? Are you looking for anything particular to go in with David Diaz? I asked Dave the same question. Are you looking for a KO? Are you looking to make a statement in Chicago, you know, possibly with David Diaz? Or are you just working on a strategy of possibly you may not be able to knock out this man? You may not be able to hold him back, so you're going to have to outbox him.
Well, I think the strategy is going to dictate itself in the fight. I have not taken David Diaz lightly by any means. Obviously, because he is a Chicago fighter, and I know how Chicago fighters fight. Also on the fight card is my younger brother from Chicago, so I know the Chicago fighters very well. I'm not taking him lightly, and I have not taken him lightly, so I've been training and doing everything in my power to come victorious in this fight. That's the only predicament that I have.
I asked Dave this question. You know, obviously, I don't know if you've heard about it yet, about some really weird regimens that some fighters are doing. And what are your thoughts, and if there's any weird regimen of training that you do? For instance, Juan Manuel Marquez was just revealed on 24/7 preparing for his fight for a man that you have fought in San Francisco, Pretty Boy Floyd Mayweather. He drinks his own urine. Have you ever heard of that, or is there other things you've heard of, or have you even tried anything like that?
No, I have heard of that when I was living in Mexico, but nothing that I would obviously would want to try. Any weird training regimens? No, not here.
Nothing. Pretty Boy Floyd Mayweather, Jesus. You know what? I was there in San Francisco. I had a chance to actually, you know, shake your glove when you were walking in the ring. You fought some pretty good fights. You fought some very, very tough fighters out there. Looking past David Diaz, I know obviously you're not looking past him. You said, you know what, you're not taking him lightly. You're taking him seriously. You're going to go in the ring and do the best you can. But looking past David Diaz, what are we focusing after him? I mean, is there any thoughts, and how did this fight come about, you even facing David Diaz at the moment?
Looking past David Diaz at this point, honestly. David Diaz is the target has to be met, and once that target gets met, then we can talk about the rest later.
I'm going to pass through real quick the interview to my co-host, Blood, a.k.a. Marlon Jordan. Brother, go ahead and ask Jesus Chavez the Matador any question, man. Blood, you there?
I know.
David Chen, go ahead and ask your question, brother.
If that blood disconnected, bro.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, David Chen.
Jesus, first I want to wish you good luck on this fight as well.
Thank you.
I hope both of you guys don't get hurt from this, but have a good fight and everybody goes home happy. Now, my question would be, what kind of things are you preparing for in terms of facing off against someone like David Diaz? Is there, you know, without giving away too much, what in your opinion are his strengths and something you want to be able to keep in mind when you're working on your game plan?
My game plan is obviously going to remain as is, a mystery up until the day of the fight. And like I said earlier, what we have been training. We've trained different methods for David, and there's A, B, and C. And so I think that, you know, we have a pretty good grip on how David fights, obviously, because I've seen him fight all his career, as he has seen me. So as far as strategy goes, I think that it's going to be a strategy of the fittest.
Can you also tell us a little bit about, in your own words, your last fight against Michael Castitas, you know, a little bit about what he's like as a fighter, your experiences, how you felt about the way the fight ended?
Well, first of all, I halted to the fight. I just didn't feel like I was gaining any momentum in that fight, and I wasn't going to gain any momentum. I know that the fight was here in Austin, Texas, but I also have to recognize that. You know, I was not going to move forward. The blood was not being able to get stopped as I anticipated. It was a big factor in the fight. I think that once I got headbutted and cut, it changed the plan a little bit. I was being a little bit more defensive other than being more offensive, and once I lost that, I wasn't gaining any momentum. So as far as Michael Castillo goes, he's a very strong fighter. He comes forward kind of like David Diaz, and I think it's going to be an interesting match.
Hey, Jesus, you know, with that fight, there was something I noticed that you were doing in there that I was kind of questioning. You know, that I'm wondering, you know, how what you said right now. You were talking about. I'm not trying to make any excuses for you, but did you feel good in that fight? Because you were squaring up your legs a lot in that fight, where your punches weren't really being that effective because of that reason. You know, there was no leverage. Did you notice that in yourself when you were going back to the corner? Was there something going on with your legs? I mean, were they feeling weak?
After I think I started losing that much blood in the fight, because it was a significant amount of blood that I lost in the fight. It was a weakening, so I think that's why I halted the fight. And I am smart enough to know that whether I'm going to be ahead in the scorecards or not. And, you know, my main concern was making sure that I practically live to fight another day. Literally.
Right. If you have any other questions for Jesus, or can we pass it on to Justin Strikehart?
I'm good, man. Let's have Justin ask his question.
All right. First of all, I'd like to say you're a fighter that I respect a lot because of all the things that you've had to overcome. And I'd like you, for anybody that's listening that doesn't understand or know about your story, if you could just go a little bit into your background and explain to everybody listening some of the things that you've had to overcome to be where you're at.
I'm going to put it to you, I'm going to just leave it very simple. Anybody who knows boxing knows my story. Anybody who is listening and is not aware of the way that I live and fight is that I have faced a lot of adversity in my life, and I have overcome that adversity by just gutting it out, fighting it out, and being determined. I think that those are pretty much the words that I could say to describe the person that I am.
Absolutely. And there is a documentary about Jesus's life too, if anybody wants to, you know,
yeah,
try to check it out. You know,
Decision.
Yeah, there's a documentary that was filmed and it's called Split Decision. And also there is a book that is called Standing Eight.
Yeah.
Both
Standing
are,
Eight, yeah.
are standing eight and split decision are probably the two main things that could pretty much describe what Jesus' life has been all about. And those are two great items to purchase if they want to get to know me a little bit better and they want to know a little bit more of Jesus Chavez. And I think it's somewhat inspiring to see and read the things that I've had to overcome in my life.
Yeah, definitely. For everybody listening, I would say if you haven't seen the movie Split Decision or read that book, it's definitely worth your while to see some of the things that Jesus has had to overcome.
Absolutely. Hold on, just before you start, because this crackling is killing me, you know, and it's really ruining this interview. This interview is a great interview, you know, and I want to be able to hear the audience to be able to hear everything that Jesus Chavez is saying. So if everybody's there on the line, David, if you could try to mute anybody that's not right now speaking in the interview, mute them. I'm trying to figure it out if it's a Jesus phone or.
I'm calling now from a cell phone, and I thought it was from my house phone, so I don't know if it's my connection or what.
No, I don't think it's Dave. I don't think it's Dave Diaz's phone now. I think it may
Dave,
be.
Dave, you know what? I think it's Jesus.
Jesus, are you on a cell phone, started. Jesus?
I am on a cell phone.
What was that?
It started when he came on that click. It is Jesus.
Jesus, could you possibly maybe walk around and see maybe if you can get a better connection? Because if you're coming in and out and we're not, and you know, and people are listening, they're not catching everything that you're saying.
Okay, sure. How's that?
I'm still getting that crackling.
Yeah. Well, I guess I better change my phone then.
Your service, man. Your service.
Yeah, I gotta change my service. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. I can hear you. Yeah, a lot better. A lot better. Let me ask you real quick, both of you guys. You know, I got David Jesus on here right now. Let me ask you guys. And Chris, I mean, Strikeheart, I'll let you get your question in real quick. But let me ask this one question. First with Jesus. What are the strong points of David Diaz, and what are the weak points that you see of him at this moment?
I don't know, probably. I can't really tell, honestly. I really can't tell. I know he's a straightforward guy. He's physically strong. I have not focused on his weaknesses, honestly, because, you know, his strength points are what we've been working on.
Okay, and Dave, it's the same question. What are the strong points about Jesus that you know of, and what are the weak points that you've noticed about him?
I mean, who hasn't seen Jesus fight knows that, the people who've seen him fight know that he comes there to fight. And I think his tenacity and his presence of his the way he manages the ring is a very strong suit of his. And we just got to prepare ourselves for that. Like I said before, we got to be in really great condition to fight Jesus Chavez. There's no cutting it out or anything like that. You got to be in tip-top shape to fight Jesus Chavez, and that's what we're preparing ourselves to do. So if we have to go 10 rounds, and like you said, it's going to be Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward all over again, it's going to be a fight like that for everybody in Chicago to watch and to enjoy. And I think we're both going to come in at the best shape that we can, and it's going to be a great fight.
You know, Jesus.
I think the only people that are honestly going to be treated in this case is going to be the people of Chicago, the people who love boxing. I think that this is going to be a fight that has been expected for a while, not necessarily between this and that, but a fight. There hasn't been a raised and born. I have not been born there, but we've been raised there, and we know what it takes to be in Chicago and be in the Chicago streets. It's tough. We're going to be tough. It's going to be a tough fight, and the only people that will appreciate this is the people that are going to be in attendance.
Hey, Dave, you know, Jesus had mentioned something, and I was going to bring it up. I'm glad he had brought it up, and the concern is, well, it's not even a concern. It's this is such a great matchup between both you guys, both Warriors, but it's not, it didn't get picked up to be televised. Do you know maybe any reason why it wasn't, or is there a possibility that the promoter from 8Count will be able to maybe stream it live later after, maybe a week after, so that fight fans like myself, hardcore fight fans, and people that are listening from Leaving in the Ring, you know, followers of Leaving the Ring, can be, you know, treated to this match, because that's what it is. This fight is a treat.
Well, the treat is going to stand to be the treat. You're going to have to treat yourself and fly yourself to Chicago and treat it.
That's true. But there are some people that are going to be like, well, I don't got the money to go fly over there and stuff. And then there's some Mexicanos that are gonna be like, it's too cold in Chicago.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think Jesus knows this, but there was a talk today of us streaming it through the internet. I was over there in Dominic's office, and he was telling me about getting it through the internet. So there might be a chance that it might get picked up through the internet, and people can watch it through the internet.
That would be great. And if you know what, Dominic, if you're listening, Leaving in the Ring would love to fly out there and broadcast it live on our radio show. You know, commentate this fight for you guys. We'll do it for free to go out there, because I think this is such a great matchup. You know, like I said, to me, this is Mickey Ward Gotti all over again. Two Mexican warriors that come to fight. They're going to represent Chicago. Chicago's excited about it. But then you got a lot of raza and a lot of hardcore fight fans, too, that are feeling this fight. They're like, the more closer you get, this fight is really interesting between the both of you guys. I'm going to pass it back to Justin Streichhardt, because I know he had another question for Jesus. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, Jesus. I was a little interested in if you plan on maybe winding down your, you know, two fights a year that you've been doing the past couple of years, because you're getting, you know, you're not getting any younger. I just wanted to know, you know, do you plan on maybe doing one fight a year or cutting boxing out at some point in the near future altogether, or can we expect to see you in the ring twice a year for the next few years to come?
Well, I think that winding down to one fight a year is kind of up in the air. I don't think that any fighter really wants to wind down. That's pretty much the road that we're all going to. We're going to have to wind down to one fight and eventually to no fight. That's just life. We all get a little bit older. We all have to mature and move on with how we view the sport as you know, from being inside the ropes. Maybe sometimes you're just going to have to know when to give it up. And I know that I am at the age, whether this is and could be the fight that either makes me or breaks me, and that's pretty much the way I'm coming to fight. You know, I'm coming to fight because this could really be my last stand, and if it is my last stand, fantastic. I'm going to give it everything that I have. I'm going to give it all in the city that has seen me blossom as a boxer, and I'm excited. I can't really think about winding down. All I keep thinking about is winding up for the fight, and as far as breaking it down to one fight a year or maybe just two fights a year for several more years, I think that life is going to dictate that. And you know that I have been prone to injuries in the past, and I have overcome four major surgeries in the past, and that just pretty much describes professional fighter outside the ring. So those are the fights that I really enjoy. I enjoy coming to box because it is what it is. I don't sometimes not like to call it fight. I don't come there to fight. I come there to box, and indeed I will.
I just wanted to say good luck, and I really, really am inspired by your story. So I just wanted to tell you that as well. So thanks for talking with us here. Leave it in the ring.
Absolutely.
Chris out of Sacramento, go ahead and ask your question, brother, to Jesus Chavez or David Diaz, or if you have a question for both of them about their upcoming matchup on September 26th at the UIC Pavilion, which is going to be promoted by A-Count Dominic. It should be a great matchup between these two guys.
Yeah, I just have a couple quick questions for Jesus. First off, you had a bit of a break in between fights a couple of years back. Was that a retirement, or was that just, you know, you were recovering from injuries?
I was recovering from injuries.
Okay.
And I think that was probably the only time that I've taken a break from boxing is that I've had to recover from different injuries.
Is that something that was beneficial for you, to have that time off?
Has it been beneficial? Yeah, I guess. I mean, I haven't gotten banged up like every other boxer out there that has been as active as I have. I've gotten banged up in a totally different scenario with my injuries, but as far as being banged up from fights, no, I am not.
All right. And also, what is the hardest part? You know, because you're in the latter stage of your career, you're 36 years old. What's the hardest part, you know, at this stage compared to maybe when you were in your 20s when it comes to training and prepping for a fight?
The hardest part has been to overcome the injuries that I have sustained in the past. And, you know, once I've gotten through those and have gotten myself back in shape, that's when I feel I'm at best.
And one last question for the both of you, if you guys could both answer. I'm just curious, is it more difficult, or what's the difference between, like, fighting someone that is somewhat kind of a friend, or, you know, someone that you respect more than just an average opponent? Like, is the prep any different, or is it different going into the ring?
Okay, well, it's not tough. It's not different. I think that the preparation for what commitment both David and I have signed up for is what it is. We have committed to engage in a boxing match, and you know, we have to do our job. It's our job to be ready for it, and you do everything that you have to do to meet that, and become accomplished.
Yeah, I believe also the same thing. I think we're both going to come prepared for this fight and give the people of Chicago what they came to see, a good old Chicago style fight. And you know, people out here in Chicago really are very, I was going to say, they're very keen on knowing their fighters and knowing what their fighters bring to the table. And they don't expect anything less than a great fight coming from both of us, especially having the type of fights we've had in the past. So, you know, everybody here in Chicago knows that it's going to be a good, nice, and civil war, you know.
If anybody, let's get some calls from the fans and see if they have any questions before we let Jesus Chavez and David Diaz off the line. It is getting a little late, so if we can get some questions really quick questions for these guys.
We got Rob from Puerto Rico, good friend of the show. Rob, go ahead and ask your questions to Dave and Jesus.
Hey guys, how are you guys doing? Just wanted to ask, who was both of your favorite fighters growing up?
Well, I mean, I was just being Mexican over here. I mean, we lived and died with Julio Cesar Chavez. But, you know, he was a personal favorite of mine, but as well as Mike Tyson in his younger days. I mean, when he was just a total beast out there to destroy. he was fun to watch. So those were the two fighters that I thought that they were awesome.
Well, I have always been a fan of Roberto Manos de Piedra Duran. Before Julio Cesar Chavez, obviously. Two different eras. And then after those two, one of my favorite guys, who's now retired and has been one of the greatest fighters in the world, and his name is Ricardo Finito López.
Oh, yeah. Ricardo López, there's a legend.
Yeah.
We have another caller.
We have a caller from the area code 760. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? My name is Red. I got a question for both of you. First one for Mr. Chavez. I had a chance to watch you on the Julio Diaz fight, and that's when your knee went out in the third round. And at the end of the fight, when you're being interviewed, you looked, man, you could see the pain in your eyes. Now, was that all because of the injury, or was that part of that still the mentality of what you experienced with LeVander Johnson from the fight before? I mean, what was going through your mind at that time?
No, I think that first of all, I found closure with LeVander Johnson before I even took that fight, and I owe that to the Johnson family. First and foremost, I thank God for their understanding of the fight game, and I'm very grateful. That's the only reason why I'm still fighting. Also, I sustained a knee injury in that fight. I tore my ACL in that fight. And it was very apparent that it was pain from the actual injury.
And then, I got one for Mr. Diaz. Man, now that you got AC, I heard in the interview that you didn't have no AC. After the Morales fight and Pacquiao fight, man, how has life changed for you? Because you just seem like a cool cat, somebody you just want to kick back with and chill. So after having that fight with Morales and going on and showing your heart on Pacquiao, how has life changed for you, just personally and you know, made you progress in the boxing career? I'm curious.
Well, in boxing, it's just made me better as a person. I'm still the same guy, man. I'm still the same down to earth person who just goes out and throws out the garbage when the wife tells him to, and you know, stuff like that, man. The only thing that I get from the people, from the fans, is just great job, and that's what keeps me going.
You're rolling in the Lexus now, right? With some AC?
No, Infinity.
Yeah, there you go.
We got a caller from the area code 909. Caller, are you on the air? Go ahead and ask some questions.
Hey, what's good? It's Grind Sean.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, Grind.
Hey, what's up, man?
Got a question, brother?
No, I just got on the line right now. What I miss?
You're missing a lot. We got David Diaz and Jesus Manuel Chavez on the line right now. You know, they're talking about the upcoming bout on September 26th in Chicago. UIC Pavilion is going to be a great matchup. It's a remake of Gotti versus Ward. Two Mexicanos that come to fight. Two Mexicanos that are going to leave it in the ring. Two Mexicanos, man, are actually a true gentleman with each other and show, hey, there is gentlemen in the sport.
Okay. You know, basically, you know, what inspires you guys, you know, to do what you do?
Well, for me, it's at the beginning of the sport, I mean, amateur and all that was, you know, for family and friends, and now that I'm a married guy with three kids, it's for my kids. You know, it's to want to leave them off better than, so they don't have to go out there and go boxing, you know, and they don't have to do this rough sport. Let daddy go get his big brains beaten in and get a little cash and let them go to college and make something of themselves.
most definitely. Do you think if your son wanted to box, you think he will be 100% supportive, or you think he will steer him away like there's some better things out there than boxing, or if he wanted to do what daddy did, you know what I'm saying, you'll feel just the same?
I mean, you as I grow older and I see, I mean, you can't deny nobody their dream, you know? You can't get in the way of that. I mean, because it's going to happen regardless if they wanted to. So I would be more than willing and happy and to show them the ins and outs of the sport. But for me to personally get involved in it, I don't think I could do that as of right now at this moment. I don't think that's in my plan. But I they would have to, yes, take up a little self-defense class, so to speak. I don't want them to get pushed around in school. You got some bad schools here in Chicago.
Okay. That's it. Just passion, my brother. Just passion. I'm not married. I don't have any kids.
Lucky you.
I don't live in Chicago, so I can't say what David just said. Married with children. That was supposed to be a joke, but nobody got it. That's cool.
I got it.
So, you know, I'm passionate about the sport. I really am. I love boxing. I always have. And that's it. Passion.
You know, guys, man, it was a pleasure having both of you guys on. Great interview. And Machine Gun Reddit just called on us, David Diaz. He's a guy that you can hang out. I gotta say same things about Jesus Chavez, man. He seemed like a real laid back guy, down to earth. You know, a guy that we could really chop it up. After you guys have this fight, whatever the outcome is, I would love to have you guys back on to talk about the fight. Because, like I said, I just see this is going to be a truly great matchup and a great, great three for the Chicago fans and for the fight community itself.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem. We'll get in touch again and talk it up, no matter the outcome. I mean, Jesus is like he said before, is a family. We're going to have a nice little family feud for a little bit, and that's it. After that, we'll go and chug a couple of beers and relax. That's it. There's no hard feelings. We both know that this is the business part of it. And like he said, he loves doing it, and I love doing it. And I mean, we're from Chicago, man. We can take a good butt whooping and give one out too.
Well, guys, I appreciate it, man. David Diaz, good luck. Jesus, good luck. And like I said, can't wait to chop it up with you guys again. The UIC in Chicago Pavilion. If you ain't got your tickets yet, go purchase them. You want to watch this matchup live? Get your tickets now to go fly out there. It's on September 26th. You can find the link on our website, www.thewillbebloodfightshow.com. In this fight, you know there will be blood. And in this fight, you know it's going to be left in the ring. Thank you, guys. You guys are true gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey, Dave, what happened to Blood? He fell off or what?
Yeah, man, he kind of just blinked off and never came back. Something must have
never
happened.
Never came back. Something must have happened and stuff, you know. You know, man, the interview was great. The only thing that was really killing me was Jesus Chavez's phone. You know, it was kind of hard. It was cracking really bad. You know, there was some stuff that I couldn't really hear. So hopefully, you know, maybe we could do a little bit of magic and clean it up. So when we try to post it up on the channels and stuff, it sounds a little bit more clear. But, you know, these guys really didn't have anything bad to say about each other, you know, and they kept it civil, even though it's a civil war. They kept it really nice and straightforward, and I want to see the matchup. I don't know. There's something about that fight, man, that just kind of got me going where I'm thinking, this is going to be a good fight. You know, both guys are not big punchers, but both guys throw a lot of punches. Both guys are coming off from, you know, not getting the short end of the stick. And, you know, and to me, it just seems I can go either way with both these fighters. Chris Sacramento, my co-partner from, you know, 916, the MMA man that always breaks the news about MMA. What is appealing if it is appealing to you for this matchup?
Crossroads fight, man. This is, aside from the fact that it's going to have a good atmosphere, you know, you got the two Mexican fighters, both got roots in Chicago. going to get a good-sized crowd, I would imagine, hometown fighters and whatnot. But seriously, you know, I want to know what David Diaz, you know, how he rebounds from that Pacquiao loss. And I want to see if, you know, this is Jesus Chavez's last stand, as he said, you know. This fight's going to – I mean, all fights answer questions, but I think this fight's going to give us a good idea on which fighter has, you know, a couple of years left or a few fights left in him and which one might really want to think about hanging him up.
Strike card, man. Fight appealing to you, or am I going a little local here? I see this fight just being in the pocket, an inside fight, not a lot of boxing. These two guys are just going to go in and mix it up.
No, yeah, you got it perfect, because they're both going to be in each other's face. They're fighting for kind of like their hometown pride. And beyond that, they're both really nice guys. So
right.
It'll be, you know, I mean, fun in a kind of weird way to see two nice guys, you know, leave it in the ring. So.
But you know what? And the funny thing is that some of the best matchups have been from two guys that respect each other, two guys that can have a beer or shake hands immediately after the fight, and two guys that probably are able to barbecue. Two fights that normally are great like that. For some particular reason, they have been able to produce great matchups, where grudge matches have not completely delivered. You know what I'm saying? Grudge matches sometimes have not given us the goods, where we're so pumped up about it, like, oh, man, it's going to be a good fight, because you got one guy talking all this trash, then you got the other guy, you know, I don't like them, you know, I'm going to, you know, talk my trash in the ring, and then when the fight night comes, it doesn't seem to spark up. That flame didn't seem to burn the forest down, you know?
Yeah. Exactly, and you brought up Gotti Ward, and you know they got along famously. So, yeah. So I guess sometimes people that can get along can really give us a good fight in the ring, as well.
You know, I hope 8 Count Dominic. I hope he streams the fight, because this fight, like I said, it for HBO or even Showtime not picking this fight up, you know, or even you know. Regular cable picking this fight up, like Versus or any other channel that should stream this fight, because this is a good fight. This is going to be an entertaining fight. It's going to be a fight enough to feed our crave as fight fans to sit there, crack open the beer, have some chips, some peanuts, or whatever it is that you like to eat, and enjoy a good matchup between two guys that are, like Chris just mentioned, crossroad fight. I'm going to go real quick with David Chen, man. I mean, what is your thoughts about this fight here?
First, I think we got to bring up the fact that it's a cool thing that these two guys are willing to, even though they don't have a huge contract with one of the big networks, a lot of money on the line, that they're still willing to fight each other and put on a good fight in their hometown, you know, just to make sure they're doing something, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of fighters out there are not willing to step in the ring for anything less than an 8-figure payday. Now,
right.
That's a double-edged sword, because it's like everybody has said, this is the crossroads fight. These, you know, both these guys are coming off of losses. So if one of them loses here on a non-televised fight, so, you know, they got nowhere to go after that, you see what I mean? So this is going to be one of those desperation, you know, leave it all in the ring kind of situations, and you're right, it's definitely a good one. I mean, no self-respecting boxing fan who knows anything about the game is going to miss a matchup like this. And when they first announced it, you figure, hey, it's Jesus Chavez, is a veteran of the game, and it's David Diaz, a solid fighter who, you know, faced some good competition. And, you know, I'm very surprised that we're not even going to get this televised, which is why I asked David Diaz that question. You know, do you think there's a trend going on where just because you lose once on HBO that you don't get a TV date again? And you know what? You know, it is what it is. These guys are going to have this local fight, and it should have been a big event. It's not, but I'm glad they're having it.
You're right, and it is. It's a little. I don't know, man. I mean, I was kind of hoping it was going to be televised. Do we still got our good friend Carlito, man? Chris called in on the line.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
What's up, brother? Hey, man. What is your take about the fight? What do you think about this fight?
Yeah, man, I think you said it best. I mean, style makes fights, and this style, these two together. I mean, David Diaz just in general fought a lot of good talent. I'll never forget his Santa Cruz comeback. He was down on all three cards and pulled off a big TKO there near the end. I think it was like 10th or 11th round. And then he got Jesus Chavez, who, you know, really is, I think, a lot of people think Castillo fights 1 and 2 were the tightest fights. But as far as just making Floyd work and making him fight, I think he pushed him the best as far as entertainment as well, too. And then he went on to do a lot of damage at 130 and 135. So I think these two guys, and like you said, it's too bad versus or they couldn't sneak it up in ESPN2 or, you know, later or somebody picked this up. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a great fight, and I believe it will be streamed. Or either way, you know, somehow it gets on there, you know. But, yeah, I think this is – when I heard this fight, I was like, okay, because I love Jesus Chavez. I mean, he's fought so many great fighters, and to give Morales and Floyd such hard work, you know, that says a lot right there.
You're right, man. You're absolutely right. You know,
we got Blood back on the line, brother. What do you think about all this?
What's
man,
up, Blood?
What's going on over here, man? I've been trying to call the show for 30 minutes. They said that all circuits are busy. What's up with
yeah,
that? What?
It's not even, you can't even hear it from the websites, man. It's been blacked out. We've been streaming, but it's been
I have a signal and everything, man. I got cut off, and I've been trying to call back for like over 30 minutes now.
You know what though? This thing has popped up and it's saying techs are working on the live streams now. So maybe there's a problem with the live streams on Blog Talk right now.
Yeah, there is.
You know, man, this is just
Well, is it not working on the computer? It's not, the radio show is not on right now either?
No.
That's right now. I'm getting emails like crazy right now. People are saying that, you know, they're not hearing it, they can't hear it. But I have an email saying techs are working on the live streams at this moment.
You might have some callers calling in because it was saying that all circuits are busy, is what it kept saying.
Right, right, man. So obviously this show is going to be streamed again, so they'll be able to hear it, you know, but unfortunately they're not hearing it at this moment, you know, at this particular moment. They're not hearing the show. You know, let's move on real quick. Let's talk about some other news in boxing. I want to talk about Kelly Pavlik, man. He got cleared from the doctor to start training on October 10th of 09 to prepare against his fight about the Punisher, Paul Williams, in December. Good matchup for Paul Williams. I don't necessarily know if it's a great matchup for Kelly Pavlik. You know, I'm going to go with Chris real quick. I think Williams at this moment, it's going to be the Punisher to the Ghost. I think the Ghost may be getting a little bit over his head, stepping with a guy that's really hungry, and may possibly outbox him in a certain way, the way Bernard Hopkins did him on his last, two fights, you know, in his first defeat. Chris?
You know, if this was the Pavlik that fought Jermaine Taylor, I might pick him. Not to say I think Paul Williams is a better boxer. I think he's more well-rounded. I think Pavlik's got the punch, you know, got the bigger punch. And, you know, although Williams is a very impressive fighter, you know, people forget, you know, in that loss to Quintana and the fights against Margarito and even Sean Vay Mitchell, the guy is easy to hit, you know. He takes a good punch, but he's there to get hit. He doesn't have the best defense. And Pavlik's got the power, you know. He's a naturally bigger guy. He's definitely got the power, I think, to possibly test that chin, you know, see how Paul reacts to it. But, man, I don't know what's going on with Kelly Pavlik ever since that loss to Hopkins and then his last fight. It's just, you hear stuff from, you know, alcohol, substance problems, you know, injuries, not focused, depressed. I mean, I don't know where all these reports are coming from, but something's going on with that kid, you know. His life just doesn't sound like it's all together, and I just don't see how he could be as focused as Paul Williams is. So I definitely am going to favor Paul Williams because he seems like the hungrier fighter and the guy that just is way more focused on what's going on.
Let's go real quick, man, with Blood, man. What's your take? What do you think about this? You know, Kelly Pavlik stepping up. Matter of fact, let me ask you this, Blood. If Kelly Pavlik knocks out the Punisher, obviously fans, media would be like, okay, well, it was a guy that, you know, fluctuated so much that it was just bound to happen where, you know, Kelly Pavlik's the unified middleweight champion of the world. But if Williams beats him to a pulp, where does that take Williams next?
Takes Williams to a whole new plateau, man. And I think that Williams is going to win the fight. But
this is the fight that both of them need. And I don't really think that anybody can make any excuses if Pavlik knocks out Williams, man, because Williams has been, you know, he's proved himself. He's a tall guy. He has a middleweight frame. Everybody knew that he was going to end up in the middleweight division anyway and that he wasn't going to be able to make 147 pounds much longer. I think his days at 147 are definitely over. He's not even in the discussion anymore. So it's a career-defining fight for both of them. Pavlik really needs to win to prove himself. We got to remember that he's never lost at middleweight. You know, he lost to Bernard Hopkins. That's his only loss. So I think that Pavlik is the man to beat right now at the middleweight division, especially with Arthur Abraham moving up to compete in the 168-pound tournament. I think that Williams is going to be a solid test for him. In fact, I think Williams is going to win the fight, man. I go Williams to lay down the punishment.
You know, you mentioned Arthur Abraham, obviously, which is he's in that tournament, two-year tournament. You know, could this be, though, in any way, bro, in any form, that if Williams is too good in this fight, it could just leave him dry in a dry river, you know what I mean, sitting in a boat with no water because of the fact that he's now legitimately that dangerous, you know, where he's in the same
boat that Hopkins was in for 10 years, you know, just
10 years, exactly.
More talented than the rest of the middleweight division. If he beats Pavlik really easy, I think that we see Williams as the king of the middleweight division for some years to come. If he chooses to stay there, but he might decide to move up and fight some of the fighters at 168 because 168 is a little bit more stacked right now than 160. That's why Arthur Abraham moved up, you know. But I think he should establish himself as a solid champion, as the man at middleweight, because we need a champion like that right now. So hopefully, if he gets through this, I think whoever wins this fight, if they decide to stay at middleweight, they have a long career ahead of them and a long reign ahead of them, depending on how the fight goes, too. It could be one of those fights that demand a rematch. Who knows?
Strikeheart, what's your take about this bout, man? What is your pick? And who? Based on your pick, why do they win?
My pick is definitely Paul Williams by decision. I think he'll be way too busy for Kelly Pavlik, who has trouble when he's got more than just one or two punches coming at him at once. And I can already see it in the corner, Jack Lowe yelling at him, "You got to double the jab, Kelly." And after about five or six rounds of that not doing anything, man, it's just going to be ugly. I think Paul Williams is going to win it, and it's not going to be a close one. I think it's going to be a decisive win. And I'm actually going to be a little happy because when Kelly Pavlik first burst on the scene, he was exciting, but I'm kind of done with him at this point. With all the staff infections and delays and cancellations, I'm ready to move beyond Kelly Pavlik and have a new middleweight champion who will fight quality opponents and fight often enough that we can stay interested.
Are we in a way, though, Strikeheart, are we in a way where we're forgetting this guy came from behind, being knocked down by Jermaine Taylor and knocking him out cold? I mean, literally putting
right.
this guy to sleep. Are we undermining the fact that this is a strong middleweight? This guy
is a strong guy.
No joke.
The thing of it is Jermaine Taylor let him off the hook. And if Jermaine Taylor could go back in time and refight that fight, he probably gets
really knocked out. But he did have a chance to have that fight. You know what I mean? He had that chance to go back inside. But
and
he couldn't pull it off.
He did a lot better, but it was at a different weight. So, you know, I don't know, man. I think Kelly Pavlik's time is over already. That's just me. I'm tired of him. So maybe I'm just ready to move beyond him. But even without that, I honestly think that Paul Williams wins, and I don't think it's going to be too hard for him to do that. He's going to be too busy.
Is there anybody in the panel right now, that disagrees? Is there anybody that's going to stick up for Kelly Pavlik at this moment? Go ahead. Huh?
Me, first of all, since when the hell did Paul Williams become Mr. Indestructible?
just wonder how this happened. This man don't got no fucking he can't. His defense is his offense. His defense is his offense. And when somebody's going to come along, Kelly Pavlik better not come in there with that jab. He better just stop that shit right now. He better just run across that ring and start throwing punches. Because you know for a fact, when you got a middleweight and a big welterweight fighting each other, the middleweight wins, especially if they're just going to collide and start throwing punches. Pavlik has to match him for hand work rate, because he ain't going to match him for hand speed. And Poland's head movement isn't even that good. You can cut him off when he's moving from side. His head movement is predictable. You know, his body movement, all he does is move to his left all night. So, I mean, but he needs to work the body, work the head, and he can get him out. That's it. I don't see that.
Yeah, but I think I kind of disagree a little bit with part of what you said. Williams, when you said that a big welterweight fighting the middleweight's going to win, I think Williams is middleweight at this point. Let's not undermine what Pavlik is up against here. He's up against another middleweight fighter.
Based on what? I mean, how are you going to base this guy, Paul Williams, stepping up at a middleweight, from what basis, though? How could you say he's now
a
middleweight?
I say he's a bona fide middleweight because, number one, he's been struggling to make 147. He's fought at 168 already. I mean, come on. I mean, this guy can't.
Listen, but that's cool. I mean, look, just because you're struggling at make 147 doesn't necessarily mean you are a middleweight. There's been a lot of fighters. For instance, Tito Trinidad struggled to make 147, but when he decided to fight with a near middleweight champion of the world at 106, you saw that this man was not a natural 160 fighter.
I think Paul Williams, because of his height and his frame, I believe that he's now a middleweight fighter. He ain't no welterweight. There's no way anybody could convince me that Paul Williams is a welterweight at this point.
How about a junior? How about him being a more legitimate junior middleweight?
Maybe, but it's only six pounds.
I mean, but look, Kelly Pavlik was able to move up in weight. You got to remember, he moved up to face Bernard Hopkins at a much higher division of what he was norm at. So that honestly tells me that Kelly Pavlik is a much bigger man. The guy is walking around probably around 185.
I'm not saying that Kelly Pavlik isn't a bigger man. I'm just saying that I don't want to undermine what he's facing. I don't want to say he's facing a blown-up welterweight because I don't believe Williams is a blown-up welterweight.
But either way, now we get to see a few things from Paul Williams that I've been having questions about. How can he deal with somebody coming at him, somebody his own damn size, first of all, or even bigger than him, and with a lot of punching power? Because he began a lot of hype about his jaw, and you know when you're fighting guys like Sean B. Mitchell, and you're the size of Paul Williams, no shit, you're gonna have a good jaw.
He fought Margarito with cement bricks in his fucking gloves. I think he's got a pretty good chance. And I don't care what nobody says. I think Mark had cement bricks in his fucking gloves when he fought Paul Williams.
I won't argue that with you, but he was barely hitting that fight. He was barely hitting that fight. I won't argue that he had shit in his gloves, but
I've never seen Williams hurt significantly, so I think his chin is pretty good.
Yeah, let me throw one more thing in there real quick. Man, Paul Williams, he pretty much, I don't want to say beat down, but he beat Winky Wright more convincingly than anyone has in a long time, if ever. And I don't think Kelly Pavlik would have beat that same Winky Wright. So that's something else you can kind of factor in. I think that Winky Wright would have schooled Pavlik, but Paul Williams pretty much had his way with him.
Yeah, but
the thing with Winky is, that might be a style-make-fight situation, though, because Winky only liked to throw his, 20, 30 punches around, and then Williams didn't really hurt Winky, right? He kind of just, threw a bunch of punches at him and then did more, and clearly got the decision. But Pavlik is going to hit back. Pavlik is not going to stand there and block, and he can reach Williams, and he can possibly hurt him. That's, the big X factor. I mean, Kelly Pavlik lost to Bernard Hopkins, but that was essentially a light heavyweight. That's a guy two weight classes above him.
Well, my urinalysis is that Williams win. Anybody want to put the urine bet on the line? Let's do it. But that's my urinalysis right there.
Damn, Blake. Are we going to have to do this again?
Nah, I think one's good enough.
I think the big thing that...
I think a big mistake that people are making, and I see this on forums a lot too, in some comments after I made a video about this Pavlik Williams thing, is putting Bernard Hopkins and Williams together as like, well, Hopkins did that to him, so he's going to do that to him. Now, he's come a far way, and I do think Williams is best complete fight as far as head movement and getting in and out, not just standing there, was against Winky, no doubt. But I think 916, Chris said it, like if he stands there, that reach is awesome, and those long arms are awesome, but he does get wide with his punches plenty. And I think if you look at Margarito, if you look at Margarito versus Paul Williams, Margarito made the mistake in the first four rounds of actually staying right in the middle of the ring and trying to box him. And if you look at the last 8 through 12, he was tagging Paul Williams all day. And I'll give him credit. He made it through that and won that fight. But I still have Paul Williams if he boxes, if he moves his head, moves his body. But, you know, he tends to stand there at times. And if he stands there, Pavlik's going to get him. I mean, I think it's going to be a tight fight, let's put it that way. I just hear a lot of pretty much done deal. I don't see that. I see a tighter fight, more like the Margarito-Paul Williams fight.
He doesn't throw his punches wide, but Pavlik doesn't throw his punches down the pipe either. Pavlik
isn't
going to make a move for that.
The right hand down the pipe.
It's the
right hand down the pipe. The jab is straight.
Not really. I just don't think it's convincingly enough. I don't think he has enough what it takes.
No, I agree, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. That's my thing. And people think the craftiness of Hopkins, he's a whole different beast when it comes
to
being crafty.
Yeah, you can't compare them two. There's no doubt about
it. You know what I mean?
And
Paul Williams is not that crafty yet. You know, he can't outbox people that much. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's where I think people are kind of forgetting about that, you know?
Well, Chris, that's where I come in, and I'm thinking, okay, listen, there's a couple of points that you guys all are making. They're great, and that's what makes this fight a lot tighter, a lot more interesting than what a lot of, you know, fight fans are thinking about. One is, Rob Blitter mentioned, he doesn't have great head movement, Paul Williams. He doesn't. You're able to tag him because he does one thing. He pulls that head back because he's so used to being so tall, much taller than his opponents, that he's able to get away with those things, those little minor things that he's able to get away. He's not going to be able to do it with a Kelly Pavlik. My thing
but
is
he leans in too, yeah.
He fights tall. He does fight tall, but for the first time, it's a big thing. Yeah, he does, but he's fighting somebody who actually has the height now, you know. So
right.
There's going to be a lot
so
of
that's
questions.
The question. That's the question, Blood. That's the big question for me is, how is he going to react to a man that's equally in height with him? That's one. Second one is, how is he going to react to a guy that his game plan is to chop wood consistently?
Right.
Chop, chop, chop. And Paul Williams, even at middleweight, you could still tell this is a skinny-framed fighter. He's not a thick guy. You know, he's got long, skinny arms, long legs, you know, and he throws these valiant punches. How is Paul Williams going to be able to keep this man, this big guy, off of him? Because that's been the success of Cali Pavlik and Styles' many fights. And for some reason, something's telling me that Paul Williams' style is going to fit perfect for the Ghost.
And the Ghost does have an output. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, he's going to throw so many punches. It's not like Kelly doesn't throw a good 60 to 80 punches around either. He throws his share of punches, too.
He does, and that's why I said he chops wood. He does chop.
Yep.
See, look, this is the difference. Even when Julio Cesar Chavez used to fight, a lot of people used to be like, well, you know, he's not a very defensive guy. You know, he takes hits. In a lot of honesty, he used to roll the shoulder with the master at really catching the punches right there a couple inches away from his face. Cali is kind of in the similarities in that way where he has that style. He likes to catch his punches. Is that? Who's got a baby?
Baby's fine. Yeah,
hey,
baby got the police in the background, got all sorts of stuff.
I know, man. Hey, that's the first. You know, somebody's having a baby or leaving in the ring, man.
Who has the baby? Who has the baby?
That's the next heavyweight. That's the next heavyweight. He's born.
That's the next heavyweight right there. So, back when I was talking about, Kelly Pavlik is really known to catch and pair shots. He's able to catch shots, move in silently, you know. And
Hey, David, real quick, sir. This is Red. Hey, David Chen, mute my phone, Doc.
All right, you got it.
What?
All
right. Is that Eric Johnson?
I don't know. No, that was Red.
That sounded like Eric Johnson.
Anyway, so going back, he's able to catch these punches. He's able to kind of maneuver his way in. And that's how I've seen him just systematically break guys down to the body, come back to the head. My only concern is this, though, is Paul Williams, if he could take away, and the same thing I've mentioned when he fought, when Kelly Pavy fought Bernard Hopkins, if he could take away Kelly's jab, he's no longer a fighter. He
yep.
doesn't know how to adjust. He doesn't know what to follow through with. He doesn't know how to lead with an overhand right or a straight right. He doesn't know how to lead with a hook. That's something that Paul Williams can do. The problem with, though, I'm seeing right now, guys, with Paul Williams is he may get overconfident because he may go, this guy's easy to land on. I can land on this guy completely all the time and make the same mistake as the other guys that were put in front of him and then end up falling like a log. I don't know.
But I mean,
that's what I see.
The only thing I'm worried about with Kelly Pavlik, if I would be honest about it, is him getting flustered. He seems to get a little too in love with his defense that he don't have and, like, you know, try to roll punches, think he James Toney or some shit, and then, like, you know, just end up popped all over the face like he was trying to do with Bernard Hopkins. You know, it was like you see him in the Hopkins fight trying to roll with punches, getting smacked up. it's stupid. It's like, you know, and that's the only thing I'm worried about. Is he going to start thinking he's James Toney all of a sudden with the black shorts and everything, or he's going to think he's Kelly Pavlik and try to slug with the person? That's what he has to do.
Yeah, he's better at when, like in the second Taylor fight, he was catching punches on his gloves and then returning fire right away. But you're right. He does, once you get past that jab. He's not like Dave said.
You know,
he's not throwing right hands.
You know what, guys? I'll say this though. You know, we're talking about Kelly's jab, but like he's a right-handed fighter, and obviously Paul Williams being a southpaw, that right hand is gonna count a lot more
right.
if Kelly Pavlik knows how to.
But it would only land though, Dave. It would only land if he leads with it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, this is where I was going with it is Kelly Pavlik is a pretty tough guy, no matter what, and we know Paul Williams is probably not gonna hurt him. So Kelly is probably gonna be there, no matter how many shots he's taking. He's gonna be there the whole night. But what if it turns out that every time he touches Paul Williams with that right hand, if he just happens to find him, he's gonna put a dent in him. You see what I mean? Like,
well,
that's something that can really, you know, is that the X factor?
That's the fact, though. This is what it is. I believe that right hand is going to find him. He can't avoid that right hand forever. I mean, if Paul Williams goes in with a perfect game plan and is able to outbox him, at one point, you got to sit in question, okay, Williams, now when are you going to get so overconfident, feeling, you know what, I can hit this guy with anything and I'll be all right. That right hand is so sneaky. We've seen it time and time again with Kelly Pavlik. He's been able to pull the rug from under you with that power. This guy can hit. You know, the only man that was able to really nullify anything Kelly had was Bernard Hopkins, and we all got to admit, this is a different breed. Bernard is a different being. This guy is a night creature. This guy will swallow everything you got.
I think the X factor is, can Williams take his punch or not? If Williams could take the power, Williams wins the decision, man.
I don't think he could take the power, Blood. I really
don't. I
don't
think so either, but I see it as I don't think he's going to get overconfident because I think he'll know damn well that he can't hurt Kelly Pavlik. I think he's going to dance. I think he's just dance his way to a 12-round decision. I don't think Kelly Pavlik's going to be able to walk Williams down at all. I think he's going to be chasing him all night and getting nowhere with it.
But Paul Williams usually comes right to you.
You know what? That's a great point right there, Justin. But the problem with that one is much bigger weight means more heavier feet. How are you going to carry that? We've never seen Paul Williams in his whole career be able to dance and box. At one point, he sits in the pocket.
Yep.
He likes to throw volumes. He likes to watch what he does. That's the big question. How disciplined? You know, it's really hard to change the stripes on a zebra. I just don't see that happen with Paul Williams. I see the Punisher going to do exactly what his name says. He's going to try to punish Pavlik. And slowly but surely, the ghost is just going to appear in front of him, and he may find himself on his ass in this fight. I'm going to say, at first, I like Cary Pavlik. I mean, I like Paul Williams in the fight. But thinking about it more and more and more, I think that the unified champion may still have one big fight left in him where he may be able to knock out Paul Williams.
Another thing in response to what Strike was saying about the ring and Paul Williams using it, Paul Williams was able to use the ring against a lot smaller men because of his leg size, you know, his overall body size. Now he's sharing the ring with a much bigger man, a man of his size. So when he takes that step back, Pavlik's going to take that step forward. He's going to find himself not too far away from Pavlik, and I don't know how he'll react to that. I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of in-the-pocket fighting, and I don't know how Paul Williams will react to that. He might end up on the ropes a lot.
Paul Williams has definitely got to outbox him, but at one point, when he gets in the pocket, there's an effective way of getting in that pocket. Kelly needs the distance. He needs that range. He needs to have his full arms extended in order for it to be effective. He gets in the pocket. He needs to close it. He needs to be the inside fighter, which we've seen him do with Antonio Margarito. He's able to pull that off, being so lanky and so tall. He's able to make sure that his punches are short and they're coming from underneath. That's what he needs to do with this fight. And to me personally, see him to cause a lot of damage and punishment with Cary Pavlik, where after the fourth, fifth, and maybe even sixth round, he's now has dug himself, embedded himself so deep into Cary Pavlik's head that this man is done. He's finished, and he may fold. He may not even come back out. He may sit in that corner. And we may be able to see a unified champion. New one.
Well, he can't sit in the corner this time because his corner can't be telling him, oh, you're still middleweight champ like they were doing in the freaking Hopkins fight. That's the worst. How can he probably should get rid of that damn corner? That shit's horrible. That was messed up. You're still middleweight champ. Don't worry.
Oh, man. Hey, Rob Miller. I don't know, man. All I know is this. In the same breath of what Cary Pavlik's up against in this fight, you got a big, tall glass of piss in front of you, brother.
That's right, bro.
And I don't know if you're going to be able to dance away from that. I don't know if you're going to be able to bob and weave away from that, because I know for one thing, your punch is not going to knock that taste out of your mouth.
Yeah, put that shit on ice or something, dude.
Talk about Craig White. Talk about Craig White.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Real quick, we only got a few more minutes. We got like 12 more minutes here on Leaving in the Ring. If this is the first time tuning in, I don't even know if it's streaming live at this moment. We did have some technical problems. Blog Talk has emailed us in, and loads are trying to, figure this out. So if you're catching on to the replay, we completely apologize. You know, this was a great segment. We had David Diaz out of Chicago along with his fellow Civil War with Jesus Chavez, because they're going to be fighting September 26th at the UIC in Pavilion in Chicago. It's a great matchup. It's a fight that really, honestly, if you're a hardcore fight fan, it's a fight that you're going to want to sit down and relax and watch. So they're trying to work it out at 8 count. Promoters at 8 count, which is Dominic, trying to work it out where they could probably hopefully live stream it, because it's a fight that I want to watch. It's a fight that I think is going to be great, man. It's going to be able to feed the crave that we got as hardcore fight fans to get in there. Hey, Carlitos, I love the segment that you just did, man. If you haven't had a chance, anybody to hear Carlitos, Chris Carlson, who's also got his degree in broadcasting, is going to have a radio show coming out pretty soon, you know, which is he's a good friend of ours, always welcome to be on the radio show, but it had a good subject and a good segment that I even made a video, but I haven't even posted it.
Nice.
But the whole boxing community did, and it just shows, man, you know, we got some great guys that come from the boxing community, some great people, man, and Chris is obviously one of them. Rob Rilla, too, man, out of Puerto Rico, good friend of ours, you know, always doesn't agree with us, and we always don't agree with him, but he's always on, and he's always dropping some good knowledge, you know, and he's a fighter himself. Had a chance to get in there and mix it up with Daniel Santos, not in the Reno sparring session, but being able to train with a guy that's the champion at the moment, and that's always good and stuff, you know.
And he's got a camera guy, now, too.
He's even got a camera even, too, man.
Yes,
you know?
Watch out now.
I don't know. You may want to give that camera the blood, because you may want to convince him not to drink that, you know. Look, listen, man.
I'm glad you got a camera, because I want to see him drink that piss.
I don't like watching people drink piss, but I'm going to enjoy watching Riddler drink that shit, though.
Hey, look, I don't think you're gonna, I don't think you're not going to be the only one that's going to enjoy watching him drink piss.
Yeah, right?
You know, we also,
with
also, man, got to give, exactly, man, smile and say salute.
Like Marquez.
You know, also, man, we got to thank, you know, Machine Gun Red, good friend, who's the PR of Leaving in the Ring to get the whole thing together with Jesus Chavez and David Diaz. He's got other stuff in works for us, man, you know. I've been working some crazy hours. The good thing is I'm done. Tomorrow's my last day. I'm done with this huge project. I'll be back in the mode again, be able to do as much things as I can, talk to my fellow brothers like Chris, Dave, Justin Strikehart, my boy Blood, you know, Chris Carlton, everybody else. Grindshine, who's on the show too, he always calls in, he's a good friend of the show, drops videos, drops his knowledge about the game. I don't know where else where I would rather be, man. To me, Leaving the Ring is like, you know, Cheers when you walk into the bar, you know what I mean? Sometimes
future
you want to go.
Fan. Future,
you know,
boxing fan, too.
Future boxing fan also, man. There's another guy that gets on there. You know, our boys over there, our brothers over there from Guard Your Grill, same thing. They listen to the show. They pop here and there, special guest appearance. It's always great to have hardcore boxing fans. Occasionally, we get our little knuckleheads, you know, that don't know nothing about the sport, but just want to drop in real quick and say something bad to us. But that's all good. It's all love. Don't even trip. Because by listening to the radio show, you're getting educated.
Hey, I invited my friend Wicked to the Dome to come to the show, but he didn't show up, though. I don't know why.
Oh, really? He said he was going to come to the show? I asked him to,
man. I told him when we on and stuff, and he ain't trying to come out and hear it, though. So, you know, that's my homeboy right there.
Of course not. Hey, you know, real quick, like I said, we have a lot of stuff to cover. We only got 8 minutes, but we're going to throw some new other news out there before we even get off. Like I said, there will be bloodfightshow.com. Our partner, standandfight.com. If you haven't checked out our website, got to check it out. You're going to get great articles from David Chen, great articles from Justin Strikehart. I do okay articles, and not that great and stuff, but you get great articles from Chris of MMA, which is due. He's got another article that's hopefully going to be up pretty soon. And if you're just tuning in, Justin Strikehart had a chance to get in on the press conference with Chris the Nightmare Oriella talking about his upcoming fight with Vitaly Klitschko. You know, also, Aliyah Saladova, who also writes for us, does some great articles and interviews, and we got P-Doc out of Chicago, who covers all the Chicago fights for us. He's out there, and he'll be at the fight for us. And also, we're waiting for him to send me the video of the press conference with him, David Diaz, and Chavez. But let's get in real quick with some news, man. We got Chris John, who's going to be on the undercard of which is the Mayweather and Marquez fight. He's over there in Big Bear, and he's training for the September 19th fight, man, for Rocky Warren. And he says he's training hard to knock out Rocky this time. That's what he's looking for. He wants to knock out Rocky. He doesn't want to leave it the way it was last time, which was a majority draw. He wants to leave it down to a knockout. He wants to do exactly what the name of the show is, Leave It in the Ring. I don't know. Chris 916, good idea. Maybe she should stick to boxing him because he may have a better chance of walking away with a decision. Or, hey, go for the gusto, go knock the dude out.
Well, maybe he figures the last fight he kind of got tired, kind of took his foot off the gas late in the rounds, and maybe thinks that's what cost, you know, that's why the draw came about. So he figures this way, if I'm more aggressive through the fight throughout, then they can't take the decision from me. It'll be definitive, my victory. So maybe he's just trying to go in with the more aggressive mindset. Real quick, though, and I know we don't really got time to talk about it, but just make sure, I mean, so we'll have stuff to talk about next week. Everyone, there's a lot of fights going on this weekend. Kessler, Ward, Calderon,
right.
And Chavez Jr.
Calderon, too.
Yeah.
Damn,
yep.
Chavez Yvonne Jr. Calderon and Mayoa.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to that fight, probably.
Yeah,
and, you know, Kessler and Ward are fighting, and these are just really, honestly, to keep them active before their big fights are happening to really hype up their matchup between each other, you know. So hopefully there's not an upset between both of these guys because it's common in boxing. This stuff does happen. That's why the word contender should be very, very important in our definition as hardcore fight fans, because contender just means roadblock, means upset, means if you're a betting man, you may want to put your money on the contender. Real quick with Blood, man, Chris John, hey, crazy?
Man, I think if he's so motivated to do it like that, man, he need to go on ahead and get the knockout, bro. If that's what he's training for and that's where his mindset is, and he's already been in there and he knows how Rocky Warrior's power feels and everything, he need to go on ahead and go on for that knockout. That's what I like to hear.
Strikeheart, man, what do you think? Bad, I say, Chris John, stick to your game plan, man. Box, you're a boxer.
Right, yeah, I would say the same thing. I guess where his mind is going is that, you know, most people felt like he won the first fight. I don't really think anybody that I've talked to said Rocky Juarez deserved the draw. So maybe he figures that the only way that he could guarantee himself a win is to go ahead and knock him out. I would say do what you did the first time, except for maybe fight a little bit harder in the last couple rounds, and you'll come away with an easy decision. Generally, when we see rematches like this, is, you know, it's not very often that you see a completely different outcome in a rematch, especially, you know, it was pretty clear that Chris John had Rocky Juarez's number up until the last couple rounds of the fight. So I really don't expect to be surprised, but I am excited to see the fight again.
And Chris John, you're walking into the backyard of that style that you're talking about, knocking now Rocky Juarez. You're walking in his backyard. You're swimming in his pond. That's what he likes to do. That's what he wants you to do. He wants you to stand and he wants you to trade with him because he's a heavy-handed guy. You got to box him. You got to. That's the only way to beat a Rocky Juarez. Real quick, you know, Dr. Theodore A. Atlas Foundation. You know, you can get on our website and you can make a quick donation, you know, 25 cents, 50 cents, a dollar. If you got money, you're not suffering this recession that we got in our economy at this moment, you could drop 2 bills, 3 bills, 4 bills. It doesn't matter. We do not benefit from it at all, leaving the ring. This is for a good cause. This is to help out children or people that are unfortunate, that don't have the abilities or, you know, the resources of getting themselves together, get them back up because they're ill. There's something wrong. Teddy Atlas has a great foundation. Leaving in the Ring, Marlon Jordan Blood, David Chen, a.k.a. Hootathan, Chris 916 out of Sacramento, Strikeheart, Justin Strikeheart, myself, and I'm pretty sure all the other guys, you know, like Chris Carlson, Carlitos, Rob Riddler, Grindshine, Future Boxer, all the guys that get on the Machine Gun Red, get on Leaving the Ring. I'm pretty sure they feel the same way. Great cause. We need to support it. Brothers, it's always a pleasure, like always, man. Hopefully next week we'll have our first MMA star on the radio show so you can talk it up with us. And I know, Justin Strikeheart, if it ain't boxing, I don't care. You guys have a great night, man. This is Dave Duane, a.k.a. 97 Rough, and they call me Rough for a reason.
Take care. Peace.
Guys.
See
ya.
Hey. Leaving in the Ring. Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, it's David Chen.
Is it me, man, or is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leaving in the Ring.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leaving in the Ring. Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room, and if you look on there, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.